Welcome to Glee Chat episode 92. We're carrying on with our flashbacks project, and we are in the middle of season two. We're gearing up to finish season two in time for season six to come out, which means that Glee Chat as a whole will have recapped every season of Glee, seeing as we started the original episodes for season three, which is quite exciting. So this week, Jack and Mitch have joined me. Caitlin wasn't able to make it, but she will be back for the next episode. But we are doing episodes from season two. But before that, just wanted to explain a little bit in case you have missed out what we're doing. We're just watching, rewatching past episodes of Glee in chronological order. We're sort of picking and choosing via voting amongst ourselves about what sort of the most important episodes are for various reasons from the past seasons in chronological, sort of going through and remembering Glee's early days. If you have anything to sort of add to this or episodes to suggest, especially for the rest of season two, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is Glee_chat, or the Hyperball comments for this post are a good place as well. We do have Instagram as well, but probably not the best communicating tool if you want to reach us immediately as Instagram
and Facebook.
And Facebook, though I don't know anything about the Glee Chat Facebook page. So
I monitor that a bit, so if someone comments and posts and stuff, I'll see it.
Okay. Well, there are many, many formats of social media to, you know, to get. And if you want to do that and leave us some feedback, we will put some feedback in the next episode for you, any thoughts about these episodes or just what we've been doing. A little bit of Glee news before we get into the season two flashbacks. We watched this week Sue Sylvester Shuffle, a Super Bowl episode, and we watched Silly Love Songs, the Valentine's episode. So that's the episodes we're going to be doing. But quickly, I think between now and when we last spoke, we did get the announcement date for season six of Glee, so the final announcement date. Season six is January the 9th, and that's going to be a Friday night on American time, and there's apparently going to be about 11 weeks running, 10 or 11 weeks, because they're starting with a double episode and they're finishing with a double episode, so it's not going to be 12 or 13 weeks, it's going to be like 11 weeks for 13 episodes or something like that, which is interesting. It's going to be a bit compact. So it's going to finish on March 20th, 2015. That's going to be the end of Glee season six. And we've had plenty of spoilers about season six so far. All sorts of things. But we have the date now. So that means we have sort of an end date for the flashbacks project, which means we're going to fit in season two. We're going to do two more episodes of season two flashbacks. We've talked a little bit about spoilers so far, but we did get one the other week about an episode that they're currently filming. This news came out a couple of days ago via Instagram or a Twitter picture that we are going to be getting Jack's dream come true happen, which is that Dijon Talton, who played Matt Rutherford, one of the first, you know, original 12, who we've obviously revisited and had no lines, who left after a season one in order for them to get, like, characters that they wanted to develop, which is a bit of a raw deal. I don't know what happened to him. But anyway, he's going to be coming back for an episode which I believe the episode itself is called 2009, and it sounds like it might be a flashback episode, basically, to the original crew. I think that there was a little bit of word about, like, people like Terry and stuff coming back. I don't know if she's confirmed. But I don't know if that's
confirmed. What would she do anymore? Like, they're married.
It's a flashback episode, yeah. Mitch.
Oh, okay. Must have missed that part.
Look,
I think I did actually. I must have heard it, but thought you were talking about Glee Chat flashbacks.
Oh, God, yeah, sorry. I don't know how it's going to work. I mean, the fact of the matter is I don't know how they're going to do it, like, without Finn. So there's that aspect as well. But I don't know if it's just a few scenes or something like that, or, like, maybe it's going to be one of those, like, maybe it's going to be, like, from the perspective of Matt and, like, what his take on, like, what the hell was going on.
Jack's
like, don't even talk to me. I can't
do this. No. And, like, if so Matt's coming back, I can't wait. And if, see, the dreams do come true, so I like to think that maybe Kendra will come back as well.
Oh, my God. I'll cross my fingers.
That'd be great.
I think I would die.
Well, should remind the viewers who don't... We should remind the listeners that she was Terry's drunken sister with, like, the kids that were going crazy. I'm thinking of, like, the one scene with the wine in her hand, and she's on the phone. She's like, Terry, I can't deal with these kids.
Jack, why are you so attached to Matt? Why is it so important to you that he comes back?
I'm not really, like, attached. Like, him as a character, like, I'm not attached to him. Like, he's just there. But it's just the fact that, like, they are bringing him back, like, when they have not even addressed him since, like, the first season. Like, I think it's just more like a nostalgia sort of thing. And they're they could easily have not done it, like, and just ignored him like they have for the rest of the seasons. But the fact that they are going back and, like, even if it's just an episode where, even if he's just there, like, in the background doing nothing, that's enough for me. Like, that's all he did in the first season.
Yeah, so they are not, like, pretending that all of this stuff, like, didn't happen and...
Yeah,
but it sounds like that they've gone back to the drawing board with, like, how they're going to be pulling plots together and stuff like that.
Yeah, and, like, the one thing with this show that I get really, like, invested in is, like, the characters and relationships between characters, and that's why, like, I really want or, like, any character who's been part of the Glee Club to come back at one point in season six. Like, even with episodes we're watching now, I want Zeiss to come back. Like, last time we saw her was season four, but I wouldn't mind seeing her for a little bit.
I really feel like Ashley Fink would be really willing to, because she seemed to really enjoy her time on Glee. And she still talks to the cast a lot, too, so it would...
She's literally best friends with Chris Colfer. That's why she had an extended role. They are, like, real-life best friends. They go everywhere together. So, yeah, she's very involved with at least, you know, portions of the cast.
Were they friends before Glee? Because he broke out as an actor on Glee, right?
Yeah, I don't think he knew many people in the industry. I think he met her on set, if you know what I mean, like, when she was, like, doing small roles and he was, like, not known at all. But, yeah, it's since about 2010 or so, they are, like, lifelong best friends. Like, she hangs out, like, with him and his boyfriend. Like, they go to, like, matching costume parties together. Like, they are very, 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 very close. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And
well, it'd be nice to have a plot with them, wouldn't it? Have her come on and just interact with her and Kurt.
Like, yeah. We'll get into that in a moment because, you know, at this point, we'll go quickly, sort of, here's what you missed on Glee. You know, Special Education, which was the regionals episode, the Glee Club tied with the Warblers at regionals. Zeiss basically replaces Kurt in the Glee Club. So Kurt is off at Dalton, and we've got that whole dynamic of Kurt and Blaine having completely separate scenes at Dalton. And so despite, you know, Chris and Ashley being really good friends, they don't have much interaction as characters ever. So that would be interesting, like a Kurt and Lauren Zeiss plot. But another thing that happened in the couple of episodes between Furt, which is the last one we saw, and this one, is that Finn and Rachel break up because Rachel does something very irrational. She finds out that Finn slept with Santana while Rachel and Finn weren't together. And to retaliate, she goes and makes out with Puck because I don't know, because she's irrational and it was very strange. But they break up and so that's sort of where they're at the moment. As I said, Zeiss joins the Glee Club, and then we had the Christmas episode as well, which didn't have too much ongoing plot. Another plot about Artie trying to walk again and Brittany being insane and Sue being insane. But
there was only one Christmas episode thus far, right? This is the first?
This is the first Christmas episode, and they didn't have a Christmas episode for season one, so this was their first Christmas episode, which was okay.
But there's not, like, a lot of plot, you know? It's just, it'd be cute to go through the songs, because there's, like, what, eight packed in there?
Oh, there's a lot.
I love the big Christmas albums.
Actually going to say, this isn't a promise, but maybe if we have some real downtime over the Christmas weekend, we could do a rewatch of just the Christmas episodes from each season and have a little bit of a talk about that.
How cute would that be?
not a promise, guys, but if we do have the time, we might try.
That would rival the Halloween episode, the original Halloween episode of Glee Chat.
I definitely have a Christmas soundboard on my my phone from last year. But let's not get into that too much. Let's go through the Super Bowl episode. First of all, the memories. Jack and I are Australian, and I mean, I know what the Super Bowl is. The Sue Sylvester Shuffle episode 211 was the basically it was Glee's Glee got the slot for the post Super Bowl episode of airing on television, and I'm assuming most people listening to this are American, so they know like that's significant. For those that don't, you know, Mitch might have to help me a little bit, but it's going to have pretty much the highest viewership of anything on TV, basically, because, what? I'm not trying to be funny.
Well, the way you said that, it sounded like it was the most watched program of all time.
It is of the year. That's the thing, it is. Like,
oh, okay. No, I thought you were saying, like, it beats, like, everything, like High School Musical 2 or whatever. I think that was the highest viewed cable anything ever.
Well, what I'm talking about is, like, Super Bowl is like one of the biggest.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Yeah, it is. Do you want me to just?
I mean, correct. Just correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But yeah, Super Bowl, obviously, giant football final championship game. Like it's the you know the final championship game of the Professional Football League. Very huge, very big deal. And the post, lots of massive commercials, like, you know, like I think Glee actually did like a commercial for them as well. Like, you know, all of this huge spectacle.
It was the Chevrolet commercial, I think, that that harkened back to the City USA and Your Chevrolet song, right? And it was like this big, they were in white costumes and they were kind of draped over these, I guess, like cake toppers. It was really strange, but it was cool. Yeah.
And then each year, I guess, like a show that, you know, I don't know how they get it. I don't know whether it's like that they're gifted it or they apply for whatever. But basically, whoever's hosting the Super Bowl, like, you know, whatever network, like Fox or, you know, whatever, in this case, Fox, they had basically anyone that's like tuned in basically to the Super Bowl will usually watch whatever's on next. And so it's like quite a big deal to get that Super Bowl episode. It's pretty much guaranteed that your like ratings will like double or triple for that episode. So I think this episode had like 19 million viewers or something like that. Like, you know, compared to about, I think they were averaging about 10 million viewers a season in season two. Season two was one of the highest viewership for Glee. I can't remember what the rating was, but this is a big deal. And I don't know exactly why, but it is a big deal. So yeah, because people like football, I guess, but
and it's a good episode. It was just a genuinely good episode of Glee.
They rose to the challenge of being given something so high profile, like even though they were already massive, because it is definitely one of the best episodes that they've ever done. It had an extra extra 10 minutes. Like it was, I guess it aired for like an hour and a half including commercials, instead of an hour including commercials. So it had an extra 10 minutes or so air time on the screen. It was a little bit longer. It's a 48-minute episode, not a 38-minute episode.
Oh, I think it's like an extra 5 minutes, I'd say, because they're usually like, what, 42, 44 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know, but it's a standard, a standard TV episode is about 40 minutes, and then it airs for an hour. Mm-hmm. This was 50 or 48 or something like that. Anyway, I know it ran for longer, and I think that those extra minutes actually probably helped, like they helped like develop each plot like a little bit better, and it just really added to the quality. So let's all vote for like 10 minutes extra footage for all TV shows and 10 minutes less commercials. Like, you know, I think they'll probably go for that. I think that could probably work out. They don't need the commercial money. It's fine.
I mean, but there are some episodes of Glee that I would die if it was 10 minutes longer.
Oh, I don't know. It would probably make it better, like, because the stuff that is stupid would have, that have a lot of the time things that are badly done are because they don't have the time to make it well done. Like, not like they haven't got time to prepare, but they don't have the time to make something plausible. There's some stuff that there's just no excuse for, but, you know.
Yeah, I think that can go, like, both ways, because, like, in, like, a TV season, for example, like, if season 5 only had, like, if there was, like, hypothetically 10 episodes in season 5 and they wanted to get all the plots that they showed done, they wouldn't have random filler episodes, you know, because like, they can't waste their time. They have to get everything out there all at once. So I kind of know what you're saying, but it can kind of go both ways.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into this. The first sort of mini plot that ties into the bigger plot is Sue and the Cheerios going to their championship or regionals or whatever, I don't know. And how she's basically disenchanted. You know, she keeps doing these routines, more and more extreme, keeps just being, you know, bored, disenchanted with it, and decides that what she wants to do is fire someone out of a cannon to make a huge impact in her routine. Brittany is the person she's elected for this, probably because she thinks she can talk Brittany into it. And then basically that entire plot is she also ends up getting her Cheerios regional moved to the same night as the game for the football, the final football game or the championship for the high school football game, so that the Glee Club and the cheerleaders in general won't be able to perform. She does this because Quinn is a very good leader and goes to Mr. Schuster. Basically, she kind of is like, Sue, you know, you're not going to do this. And she tells, you know, Brittany and Santana that she'll take care of it, tells Mr. Schuster that they're doing this thing and that it's unsafe, and Will basically tries to get it stopped via Figgins. And so Sue has a crazy extended rage fit, which is insane, but ends up sort of manipulating the Cheerios into sticking with her instead of sticking with the Glee Club. So they end up, you know, leaving the Glee Club, or at least leaving them for that performance. It's a bit confusing. And then at the very end, you know, the day is saved by, you know, them coming back to Glee and quitting Cheerios, basically, like, permanently quitting Cheerios in order to participate in Glee for the Super Bowl, or for the, you know, the championship game that they have there, and all that kind of thing. So this plot is, you know, as I said, the sort of the smaller side to the bigger, you know, football plot, which we'll get into. But I just wanted to sort of talk about, you know, Sue's relationship with these girls, I guess, like, and why they sort of put up with it, and why they sort of flip-flop around so much about, like, whether they care about being Cheerios or not, like, all of that kind of thing, you know. You get a lot of, like, Finn and Quinn conversation in this episode about, like, how, you know, Cheerios haven't done anything for her and Glee Club is her true home, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, Jack, sort of, how did you sort of, what's your take on, I guess, Quinn and the other girls, you know, sticking with Cheerios, or just the way that Sue treats them, basically? Why, you know, would they be so determined to stay?
I think, like, it goes back sort of to something that Quinn said in this episode, how she says, like, that school is all about labels. So she's just, like, so obsessed with popularity that she thinks that, like, she doesn't care how she's being treated in the Cheerios, as long as she is a Cheerio. And I really appreciate that, like, this whole, like, your question and, like, this whole plot gets addressed, like when they leave high school, how in the Corey tribute, Santana, like, is raging at Sue about how they were treated, and, like, how she has always hated how they were treated and stuff. So I really like how it does get some, like, credit, and, like, it wasn't just, like, they get pushed around and it's nothing. Like, I like how you can see how Sue's treatment actually affects, like, the girls specifically. Yeah. More so Santana, and I guess a bit of Quinn.
Yeah, I mean, because Brittany, we have Brittany, dear Brittany, who, like, you know, throughout the episode, they keep trying, you know, Sue keeps trying to manipulate her, you know, like with the, you know, the baby cannons, you know, and the twin baby cannons at home and all of that kind of stuff. I don't know, like, I just, it's funny, like with Sue, like, about how much she allegedly cares about, you know, cheerleading or cares about these girls, we have moments of, you know, real love from her for like students or for doing the right thing or for whatever. And then we have these moments of complete idiocy like this. So does this kind of, you know, does it make, like, do you ever want, you know, something different, like, either way from Sue? Like, or you know, would you rather her be more realistic in terms of, you know, not be this insane, or would you rather have her be all the way insane and not have the moments of caring, or is the blend sort of good? Like, Mitch, kind of looking back to this now, this completely insane plot of hers, basically, and her, you know, disregard for human life, etc., do you sort of like the mix between crazy and real, or do you wish it was more one way or the other?
Oh, hell no. I wish it was just more than one way or the other, because you can't mess around with what a character thinks and does and expect us to follow it. I've given up on Sue. I've given up on liking her. I've given up on not liking her. I don't understand her, and I don't care to understand her. The creators don't know what they're doing with her, and they're never going to know what they're doing with her.
I disagree a bit.
Like, I don't...
Sorry, go on, Jack. Sorry, that was just so concise. It felt like you were holding that in for a long time.
Oh, yeah, Sue's not my favorite out in Glee, I'll give you that much.
Okay, sorry, yeah, go ahead, Jack.
I don't look at Sue and expect to see, like, a realistic, like, character. So, like, when she has, like, plots like this and even, like, marrying herself, I find it funny and I laugh along just because I know it's not meant to be, like, real. But in saying that, I really appreciate, like, where her views, a lot of her views come from. Even things like when she talks about the arts and how, like, she's going to cut the arts because it's interfering with people's education, things like that. Like, she comes from a, like, educated and, like, good spot, even though she's, like, crazy about it. So I appreciate the blend, but only because I don't look at her and, like, point out all the inconsistencies, and it doesn't affect me in the way it probably affects you, said Black Mitch, because it seems like it hits you in a personal spot that can't ever be fixed.
I mean, that's okay.
It's just so annoying. It just, they have so, they have this really well-known character in Glee that a lot of people know from, like, the 40-year-old virgin or whatever, as a really funny comedian, so it's really great to see her go and be rageful and throw around things when she doesn't get her way. And then she has moments where she, like, yes, wants to blow Britney out of a cannon, but in the same breath would say, Kurt, I will save your life from Karofsky, and it doesn't make any sense. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I was actually doing, like, the Glee Season 3 quiz for Hyperbole the other day, and I was like... Oh, you did the quiz? How did you do?
15 out of 16.
Oh my god, good job, Jack. I think you're the only person that does well.
Jack, how didn't you get 100?
I don't know, it was like the question I didn't get was what Finn gave to Rachel. It was like he gave her a mug, not the glass. So that could have been.
See, I would have just guessed the star necklace.
Oh, well, it was an option of various things. Anyway, yes, thank you. But basically in that, when I was recapping, one of the questions was actually which of the teachers, like, reacted the worst and started crying when they found out about Karofsky's attempted suicide, and it was Sue. That was the answer. And I was like, there are so many moments where she's, like, really emotionally deep, and then there's sometimes it's like she literally doesn't care about killing Brittany. Like, I think Finn says that. He's like, Sue doesn't care about killing Brittany, like, if you know what I mean. So, yeah. I know you guys both...
And it's, like, very well known to Santana, especially, who is just, like... And Brittany's like, she's gonna kill me. And Santana's like, it'll be worth it.
It'll be worth it. God, that was funny, though.
But they were ready to, like, you know, sing at her eulogy and everything. Like, that was it. Yeah. That was Brittany's end. I'm sure if Finn didn't come by... I mean, obviously, it never would have, because, my God, then it would have been as comical, but...
Well, that's... You guys are both, like, fans of Quinn... So, yeah, what did you guys think of, basically, Quinn and Finn, you know, before we get to the end with the Quinn and Finn,
right.
You know-ness, what did you guys think of kind of Finn and Quinn, I guess as friends, like as people who've known each other a long time and having opinions on each other's life and choices and the way that they spoke to each other in this episode? Like, how did you guys feel about that? Like, Jack, did you sort of think anything about that sort of relationship?
I like their friendship, like, and I like the idea of people who have been in, well, I mean, like, I, not me personally, like, but, like, other friends, like, people who have been in a relationship, and therefore they know each other really well, really close, and then they can continue to be friends once the relationship sort of ends, but just based on that closeness, but in a different way. So I appreciate that, but in saying that, I don't like how Quinn and Finn are being handled. This is the only plot line with Quinn that I don't like. I just don't really like seeing cheating, like, on TV. Like, it just bothers me, and especially because this cheating is so manipulative and calculating, especially, like, in the next episode with Sam and stuff. Like, they're literally thinking about it, and it, like, it just bothers me a bit, so, yeah.
Yeah.
But I know, Mitch, you're a big fan of Quinn, so, like, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it does make me uncomfortable to see people cheating on TV. I couldn't enunciate that properly until I heard you say it, and then I realized that it's just not right, because there's so many things that you can see these characters doing otherwise, and their motivations never seem right.
Yeah, exactly.
I
would have really loved the conversations between Quinn and Finn in this episode if it hadn't ended in them, like, kissing, if you know what I mean. Like, I really would have liked that as, like, two people who know each other really well and have opinions about each other, but not as a, like, oh, we still have some sort of, like, hold on each other and we're going to end up back together.
Well, it didn't need to go to that extent, and it just makes me feel, watching Glee, like, it's akin to a show where a lot of characters will die off. I'm very relevant. It's where I talked to Jack about American Horror Story, and Ryan Murphy kills off characters left and right. I don't feel remorse when they die. I don't feel remorse when these characters cheat on each other, because it happens too frequently in Glee for me to even care anymore. It's like Ryan Murphy at times just tosses around characters in different plots and ideas and doesn't really care where they're going to land. And that kind of makes me sad, because Quinn is so awesome. I don't want to see her stoop to that dark level.
Yeah. She does say some stuff in the next episode. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jack.
There you go, Jack.
I was going to say, she says some stuff in the next episode, which we'll get to. But, the amount of thought they're putting into it, basically, you know, it is skipping ahead. But when she says, you know, you realize if I do this, you know, I'll be cheating on someone else. Like, the thing that, you know, hurt you so much that it made you break up with me and Rachel, like, that, you know, Finn, you know, going against, it is really dodgy, but of Finn especially, I mean, of both of them, but, like, of Finn to be like, I don't care if, you know, you cheat on other people with me, you know, that's fine, you know, like,
but that bothers me, anyway, like, they're even, like, addressing it.
No, and it harkens, like, go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, Mitch, sort of what you were going off, like, what you said about American Horror Story and all that, like, I've completely lost my train of thought. Sorry, go ahead.
Probably something about, like, you know, not feeling as much for characters because plots are recycled and dramatic moments happen too often for them to feel big and brand anymore. This also harkens me back to when there was a lot of thought in Smash with Julia, with her guy that she was cheating with, and it was similar. It was frustrating because it makes me wonder if in the real world people really sit there and think and talk about cheating on each other so much, or they just kind of do it and keep it more secretive. I always imagine the latter, because why would you want to think about it if you're feeling guilty? Maybe you're not? I don't know. It's a really strange thing to see that on TV, because not knowing personal experience, I suppose, but I can't imagine myself sitting around and talking about it like, yeah, this is probably a good idea.
As opposed to just, doing it and pretending it's not happening.
Yeah. That's how I imagine that would happen in the real world, but I don't know. I guess
I think people like to think that it's not more acceptable, but that it's more like they want to think that cheating is like impulsive, if you know what I mean. It's like that it's like something that's, you know, happened before they've thought about it, and they've thought it out and still made the decision to do it. It's kind of even grosser or whatever. So
I mean, I guess it kind of reminds me of God, I'm trying not to be like a lawyer in Glee Chat sometimes, and it happens, where in a criminal law, if you premeditated the murder, in American law at least, that is much worse than than a crime of passion. So, I mean, that's all about what we're talking about right here in cheating.
Yeah, people want cheating to be a crime of passion. They want to think about it like that, as opposed to like, I've made this decision really actively.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, I'd say if you're looking to openly be with another man, like, to where you're thinking about it openly in your mind, I should say, you should be open with your partner about it. You should tell them, this is how I feel. I still like both of you. This is what I want. Can we work with this? And if not, then you can't have either. That's not the way it works. It's just, well, obviously characters aren't that well thought out. Usually they just kind of go for what they want. If only we were them, right? We'd feel the same way, as I assume. But I don't know.
I just feel
bad for, like, Sam, like, the person who's, like, who knows that, like, there has been that much thought into, like, the cheating, and, like, how does he feel? You know? I mean, this is more into the second episode, I guess, but, yeah.
Yeah. Poor Sam. I will definitely talk about Sam soon, in the next episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because him and Mike have these puppy dog eyes in these episodes that I fall in love with, and they make me feel even worse for, especially Sam.
Oh, dear. All right. The main plot of this episode, aside from Sue and her cheerleading, is actually the football championship of the school, of McKinley, and how the drama between the jocks at the school and the, you know, the Glee Club boys or the Glee Club in general is becoming extra worse and extra bad. You know, that they all, I think the whole team, like, slushies Artie all at once, like, to the point where he, like, is kind of, like, chilled and sick from it. And then basically Beast tries to force, or Beast and Will force the football team to sit on Glee for a week and perform at the halftime show for the entertainment of their football game because the cheerleaders are getting taken away by Sue. And Beast and Will are both actually kind of cool in this episode. Will I found actually really funny throughout most of this episode. I did. I don't know. I was just like, I was really into it. I think like him and Beast, when he's not being gross with her, I think are a really good team.
Yeah, but wasn't it creepy just seeing him in the locker room now? Because I was like, what's he going to try next?
Well, that's, okay, we'll get to that because that was one of my quotes as well.
Beast, yeah.
Yeah, because for real. I was like, yeah. But, but you know, it starts out, you know, like with all kind of things that, you know, like Puck kind of getting it into them, you know, with the guys that, you know, lots of fighting. And then the Glee Club obviously gets, you know, the football players have to sit in and learn about what they do and sort of, you know, whatever, put up with each other, etc. A few things about this that I have questions about, basically. Number one, like the fact that they address the bullying so openly yet don't do anything about it. Like they're like, you know, people like David, like you know, about Karofsky. We've got a whole other section about Karofsky that I want to talk about because he's very, very, very big part of this episode. But, you know, Will's like, you know, people like David, they bully because of blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, so you like literally know, I know that he was like expelled and came back, but you know that he does this, but you're not like monitoring him constantly to stop him doing it or anything? Like, no? Is
yeah.
that
yeah.
not a thing?
I always felt that the slushies in particular were part of the fantasy of Glee, and it's more season one that this all originates in, because as we go on in the seasons, it becomes more real, more in-depth, and less fantasy, yeah. oddly enough. But they still yeah. keep some fantasy elements, like the slushy. Yeah. So it just it hurts to see, like, I mean, to go to the most daring extreme that you reminded me of, Natalie, in season three when Karofsky, you know, tries to commit suicide from his bullying, but yeah. then this bullying can still go on. It doesn't make sense. Like, the show can't, you know, anticipate or I suppose occupy both sides of that spectrum at the same time. You need to just pick, is bowling good, bad, kind of right, funny, no. like where is it, you know, where's
I
it
get
sit?
What you mean. I get what you're trying to say. Like, I think that what it, yeah what it is that yeah like for season one or whatever, if it was like a black comedy, that like really bad unrealistic stuff could happen without consequences. Oh, yeah. And it was funny,
almost like a cartoon, really.
Whereas If you make it deeper, if you call it out, you then can't just pretend it's like black comedy. If you know what I mean, like if you mm-hmm. make mm-hmm. it deeper, you can't. Then you have to treat the characters or treat the subject like it's a big deal with consequences.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to just something that like you know like cartoon shows where like kids have no parents that you ever see or something like that. Like if you start treating like a topic or a show or a character like it's, you know, real and not like an absurd joke, then you can't, like, kind of make different rules for it. So it's weird to me that they, like, address the bullying and, like, don't do that much about it, basically, and the slushing and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But so that's kind of weird to me. A couple of other things. Azemio. Azemio is a great character, and I love watching him in this episode, even though he's, like, a terrible person. Jack, I feel like I've heard you talk about him before as well.
Maybe. I think I probably would have brought it up a bit. Oh, no, because I wasn't on Glee Chat, so sorry. One thing about Azemio, I just like seeing him and Karofsky together, and I've always had a little bit of headcanon on how Azemio felt when Karofsky tried to commit suicide. I always like. I always have a bit of headcanon. I just wonder how characters react. You know, like.
Yeah. He's Azemio is one of the football players. Obviously, Azemio and Karofsky were like two of the big, you know, bullies and stuff, and they're both on the football team. I have always really liked him because Azemio is, he's really smart, which sucks because he bullies, but he's clearly really smart. Like his lines are very witty. They come from like very like sort of educated and intelligent place, which makes him even more horrible, basically, because he's educated and kind of smart and still a gross person. But I find him hilarious to watch. Like, when he's just like, well, you know, the girl with the mohawk had a really good voice. Like, he's clearly gross and prejudiced, But when he was like, you know, I'm not singing show tunes. That is the music of my oppressors.
Oh, that was my question.
Funny guy.
I didn't get that in particular. Was that meant to? I don't know. I don't even know what that was meant to be. Can you explain what that was, Natalie?
If you want like a lecture on like the history of musical theater, I can. Yeah, but basically, it was very white, and they did a lot of like. Don't know if you've heard of like something called a minstrel show, which is basically back in the early days of racism. There were, you know, a lot of black music was stolen or appropriated from like, you know, black communities, even slave communities, and made into like modern, like on more mainstream white music, and people would even perform. A minstrel show was basically people doing blackface, like white people, like dressing up as black people and performing like black music as a sort of music hall kind of thing. And there's this whole history basically, you know, of that kind of thing. So that's sort of my first thought about it.
That makes more sense. 'Cause I did do like a musical, I don't know if it was just musical appreciation of American music or something, but yeah, it touched on that, and it was kind of a heavy part of the class too, because most of it was just like, I don't know, whatever, Elvis and the Beatles, and then it went into like minstrel stuff, and it's so disturbing how like happy and excited the audience seems to feel toward like those horrible characterizations of black people. And yeah, no, it's very disturbing. So yeah, I'm glad you put that into perspective, because I agree almost with Azimio that he's educated and yes, times have changed, but I can see where he still might hold that against.
Yeah,
Broadway,
I mean, I know? Also think he was being kind of like just objectioning at everything that he could, but yeah. Yes, there's certainly.
He's definitely being facetious here. He doesn't really mean it that way.
I mean, he might have meant this, but he was facetious about a lot of things, so it's a bit difficult. My other question I have is basically the footballers. I know we've asked this so many times, but why do they all hate this so much? It's not, presumably they don't hate all music. They don't all hate music. They don't, like, look at people who make music, like pop stars, and think that the pop stars are, like, pathetic. They don't think that music is bad. So do they just hate people that have, like, the drive to perform? Do they hate people that, like, they like the result, but they think the participation is, like, for other people or something like that? Like, you know, musicians and pop stars and, you know, are some of the biggest, like, celebrities in the world, even for, like, high schoolers, you know? Like, I understand that they maybe don't want to get up there and, you know, do whatever it was, like, you know, sequin ball gown or whatever he was talking about, and they had a bit of a weird idea about what the Glee Club do. But why do you think that they would object so much to the idea of doing performance, basically, given the fact that they clearly don't just hate music?
It's because, like, I think it's because, like, well, I think the reason why they all don't want to do it is because it's just, like, this preconceived idea that, like, it's like, they're going to get mocked and stuff for doing this, even though it's actually kind of awesome, like, going up there singing Michael Jackson dressed as zombies, you know, like, that's actually a pretty cool idea, but it's just the fact that, oh, we have to go sing and dance in front of everyone, so, like, one person doesn't like it, so then it's, like, a group effect sort of thing, like, conformity, like, they're all conforming to, like, not liking this idea, but at the moment, like, the one person's like, yeah, this is quite awesome, actually, and if someone else agrees, then, like, other people are going to be more inclined to be like, yeah, this is actually kind of fun. So I think that's, like, it's such, like, a conformity situation with the
so weird. Because I can't get over it. It's clearly, like, they don't think, it's not like they think that Michael Jackson or that, you know, rock stars or, like, you know, all of these people, they don't think that they're bad. And so I don't understand why they wouldn't, like, what, I don't understand this attitude at all. So, yeah, anyway, well, move on from that for the moment.
I think it could be something with homophobia, too, because they do often reference, like, when someone's into theater and their football crew. Obviously, we've seen a lot with, like, for instance, Finn, and they could kind of go off of that with Kurt. But then the comment that said to Crofts you later, like, oh, no, he's a homo or something like that. I think it's coming from where Beast brought it in, that they don't like it because they're uneducated about what it means and what you can or can't be in
it's
musical
stuff.
It's just
so weird to me, because even, like, you know, with theater or acting, it's like they go to, I'm assuming they go to movies, I'm assuming, like, they've seen, like, a movie, they've seen Die Hard or The Fast and the Furious or something. It's like, yeah, those guys are still actors as well and do performance. It's really weird to me. Anyway.
Yeah, it is weird. Well, it's uneducated, really, so that's why it should be weird to us, because we're a lot more educated in all things musical theater, aren't we?
About it from outside the perspective, I suppose. But it's just always been really,
and that's probably a group think, too, that the show is trying to convey that, I mean, perhaps not all those silent football players in the background don't agree with, like, Azimio and sometimes Skorofsky, but they kind of go along with them because they're the powerhouses.
Yeah.
So, basically, they all kind of get into it. Like, they all eventually, you know, after they do the rehearsal and it's all kind of cool, and then they do their, like, warm-up number, which Skorofsky suggests, and again, hold off on Skorofsky because I want to talk about him separately. But they do that, and then the hockey team, who, continuity issue, by the way, Skorofsky and Azimio used to be hockey players, not football players. They just put them on the football team because they wanted them to have more interaction with the league.
Anyway, like season one, they were hockey players?
They were hockey. I mean, they could change sport. That's fine. They could choose a different sport, a different year. Yeah. Just saying. Anyway, the hockey guys attack them with slushies, and they kind of get a taste of their own medicine, and then they go, you know, they basically quit. Like, Skorofsky convinces them to quit, and that just that dropping out of football is better than dealing with this. And then the girls sign up instead. You know, they basically get the information from Blaine that they only need like 9 people to field a regulation team. And so the girls can just be members without, you know, having to actually play in order to get them on the field, which is nice. And then that all goes down, and it's very, very cute and funny. And then the boys, basically, you know, they all come, Finn sort of comes up with a plan where he goes and gets the Cheerios back. He sends Puck to convince the football players to come back. Which, by the way, he doesn't get enough credit for. He does the actual hardest work, Puck, in this. Like, he goes and actually, like, gives them this amazing speech that gets them to come back. And then they do the halftime show, play the game, and win. So, yay for that. That's all great. This basic aspect, a couple of things I wanted to talk about here is, obviously, the girls joining the football team, which, again, I think we've all put as part of our favourite moments, so we'll actually talk about that at that point. All different aspects of that, because, but basically, yeah, it's, you know, they come out, they, you know, they participate as players because they, you know, they're allowed, it means that the rest of the team can go on the field. And then the speech of Puck basically going back to the locker room and you know, telling all of the guys, you know, that, you know, he has this great, great moment basically where he's saying, you know, you guys are wasting your, you know, your lives, like that, you know, he says something like, you know, you're so afraid of being called geeks or losers or gay that you'll settle for being nothing, which I just think is so... Yeah. Cool.
I love that so much.
He does not get enough credit in this episode, Puck. Like, he's like Finn is not the hero of this hour. I mean, Finn comes up with some, you know, he's proactive about, you know, doing stuff whereas people are just putting up with it. But Puck, like, just amazing, like, so good.
And he just knows what to say as well. Like, he knows exactly the right thing to say. And it's like, he's not even like, he didn't even have to think about, like, what to do. He just, like, knew what to do, which I really like.
Yeah. And I mean, why do you think that is? Like, I feel like the difference might be because Finn was always kind of a bit different. Finn was a bit idealistic and delusional right from the start, whereas Puck kind of knows where they're coming from, I guess. Like, he knows how to get, like, he knows how to talk from their point of view, I suppose. Whereas Finn,
I think it's because, like, he felt like what he was saying, like how you settle for like less because you're afraid of being called names. I think because, like, he was there. Like, that was him, like, for a lot of season one until he opened himself up to the idea of, like, doing stuff that actually makes him happy, and then that's changed him. Like, he knows because he knows what they're probably going through because he went through it himself.
Yeah.
That's what I think, at least.
Yeah. I really love that. Mitch, what was your sort of favourite part of the whole, like, you know, reunion of I guess, the team, you know, the football team and the halftime show and stuff like that?
Yeah, I still do think it was the bit where Quinn, Santana, and Brittany meld on over into the team, I suppose. And there's this shot of Thriller that starts with Quinn and her hair's all frazzled and she looks like she's really into it. And I could tell just that, like, that Diana was really happy with her character's decision to do this because she was really into that bit of the performance. And for as little screen time as that little bit was, it really, it kind of just spoke to me that, like, you know, the reasons I love Quinn are just.
Yeah, I mean, how did you feel about her, like, you know, the actual scene of them, like, quitting, like, the chariot
in
front of Sue, like...
Like, the way that Sue walks away, she's so out of power. She has nothing left because Santana's like, but we're still quitting, bye. I love that moment, because I love when Santana especially sticks up to Sue, because Sue doesn't really want to give it back to her. She's almost afraid of Santana. She knows Santana has a lot of power. She's like, I don't want to get messed up with the, you know, East Lima Heights, you know...
Lima Heights, Jason.
Whatever she is,
Why do you think Sue's getting a Santana?
I totally think she's scared of Santana. She has all the reasons to be, because Santana is just, like, feistier with her words. Because Sue can be mean, but I know for a fact that Santana knows how to cut down someone to their utter core. If she wanted to, and I think she has, she can cut down Sue to, like, her bones with her words. She doesn't need, like, a knife or fists. She is a silver tongue like you've never seen.
Oh, my God.
I'd be scared of that, too. I wouldn't want to even talk to Santana. I'd be afraid of her.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see too much facing off between Sue and Santana until the end, which Jack mentions, like, in season 5, which I really, really like. But
what was that moment? Yeah. Was it when Sue was trying to, like, mess up the whole Broadway, big show that Rachel was doing because she was, like, sleeping with the guy? Or I think that was Rachel's blow-up on Sue,
wasn't it? It was in the Corey tribute when, I can't actually remember what Sue did, but, like, Santana was just, like... was so angry about what she maybe, like, had said about Finn or something. Yeah, and then she was carrying on about how, like, she's always hated Sue and things like that.
Oh, yeah, didn't she, like, threaten to call the police in Santana or something from the words or something she was saying? I don't know.
Oh, but- she threatened to call the police, but I think what Sue initially did was she was going to take away the memorial they had in the locker, but it wasn't like her. It was like she had to do it from based on the school board. I can't remember.
Yeah, but regardless, like, you can see what I'm saying then, Natalie, that Santana is, I think, the most dangerous character in the show, even more so than Sue.
I mean, I definitely wouldn't want to cross her, basically.
Oh, God, no.
But,
You would never live it down. She'd give you freaking mono.
Yeah.
You would die for her. Oh, God.
Okay, let's get into this for a moment with Kurovsky, because he was obviously a major part of this episode, huge part of this episode, that they really gave him a lot. Like, they kind of took a little bit of a risk, I suppose, in putting so much of this high-profile episode, like, on the skills of a relatively unknown character. But my God, he was good. Like, the thing, like, you know, whether you like or dislike, whether you have compassion for this character or not, he is a great actor. He is a better quality, like, subtler, more real actor than a lot of people in the show. And obviously he started out you know, doing pretty basic stuff, but he's got the kind of acting that could be in, like, you know, serious dramas or, like, indie movies or that kind of thing. He's a very, 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 very good actor, Max Adler, and it actually made me really excited for this terrible, terrible Blaine plot in season 6. Like, it's going to be bad. I'm not going to lie to you. And they're probably going to make it really overblown and stupid. But if they give Max Adler anything to work with, he will make it as good as it can possibly be, if you know what I mean, because he is very, very, very talented. So, yeah, I just sort of wanted to talk a little bit through of Kurovsky and his arc, I guess, like, because he's obviously the most objectioning to all of this. You know, and we know it's because he's, you know, in the closet and because of the drama with Kurt and all of that kind of thing. And he's sort of, him and Finn are really at each other's throats constantly because of Kurt as well. So he has a lot of conversations with, you know, and fights with Finn, which I really like. But there's just a lot of little moments, I suppose, like, you know, when he first starts getting confident with the dancing and, like, sort of, you can kind of seeing him enjoying it. And then, you know, when Will talks to him and compliments him and, you know, and then when he gets slushied as well, like, in those first parts where they're sort of leading up, you know, doing the dancing, and then he sort of suggests the warm-up number to Finn, he has this real, like, I don't know, like, this innocence, and it does sort of make me feel sorry for him. And his reaction when he gets, you know, slushied as well is is and just Finn. Him and Finn were great together. Like, really, really work well off of each other. So, I don't know. Yeah. I just really loved watching him, basically, in this episode. Obviously, he went ahead to suggest that warm-up. Like, you could tell he was kind of getting into it. And I don't know. It just, that whole arc of him. And then, obviously, again, even he refuses to do the football, you know, the halftime show. But once he sees everyone enjoying it and people reacting, like, well to it, he's like, oh, my God, I really, but I want to do it. Like, I'm going to do it. And to me, it just, I don't know, it's not a great quality in a person or anything, but it seems like he needs approval. Like, he seems like he needs approval from the world to know something that he wants or feels good about is okay, which is going to tie into him, obviously, being gay and coming out. Like, when he does eventually come out, you know, it's going to be, you know, because he's realized that he looks around and, like, that the majority of the world where he is doesn't care, if you know what I mean, like, that it's okay. And it's not a great quality. It's a very, you know, lacking in confidence, you know, sort of,
I think,
quality. But, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sorry, Jack.
I think a lot of that is as well, like, he doesn't realize that just because he's gay doesn't mean that he's going to like dancing and be like a feminine sort of person, like a Kirk type person. So I think, like, that's a big part of it as well. And that's a lot of that's a lot of people's problems. Like, I have a friend who's recently come out, and, like, he gets, he's not homophobic anyway, obviously, because he's gay, but, like, he gets really weird about gay people who are, like, more feminine. And it's just kind of, I think it's a bit like that. Like, he needs to realize it's not black or white. It's not one way or the other. You know, he can be playing football and do all that kind of stuff and, you know, be
you know, Jack, I think even in or outside of the closet that there can be homophobic homosexuals, because I've met...
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean...
Internalized homophobia is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
I suppose in a way my friend's a little bit like that. It's just a bit odd, like, yeah.
Yeah, it strikes you as odd because it makes you feel like you're fighting against yourself. And I can't remember the exact example, but I remember that there was... I mean, this is so wild to even try and bring up, but there was a blind black woman who was racist against black people but didn't know what they looked like and didn't know she was one on a talk show that I remember.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was so crazy. I want to find this on Google to see if this is...
No, oh, God, that's too extreme for me. That's like too Maury Povich or something. Anyway, yeah, go on.
Kind of like extremely wild stuff like that. But, yeah, Jack, I shouldn't say it disturbed me because I think that's too strong of a word, mm-hmm. but... It showed me that you did not yet have the worldly experience to realize that perhaps some people who are gay would still be against themselves as much as perhaps that blind black woman was racist against black people. I mean, it's like, it is counterintuitive though, right? Because you're like, well, I don't want rights for myself then, or it kind of falls into
homophobia.
Yeah, exactly. And often I find that it falls into when it's kind of like a pray the gay away situation where someone knows they're gay, admits they're gay, says they have those feelings, but then tries to, you know, demonize everything of homophobia still. And that's another form of it, I suppose. But yeah, I think you're talking more about like the mannerisms, Jack. And I think that as Natalie and I are pointing out, that that's like another, what's the term you're using, Natalie?
Well, internalized. Like, internalized. Yeah, internalized homophobia. But right. I don't know. I do know what you mean, Jack, in terms of, you know, like, that he's probably fine, you know, that he's gay. Like, he's probably fine with the idea that he is, you know, that he likes men, etc., you know, but that he doesn't like the stigma of the stereotype, or that it makes people uncomfortable. You know, people will think, oh, because he likes men, that it means that he's like that. And I mean, you know, people just shouldn't care either way, but it's certainly, certainly an issue. Yeah.
And I think like him, like seeing like all of his friends dancing and stuff, he's realized that it's actually fine. And I think that like on a character level, like him, he feels like going in there and dancing with everyone, doing something that he could view as like what could be considered like a gay like behavior. Mm-hmm. Doing it with everyone else makes it seem like he fits in and he feels included and like things are going to be okay for a bit. I think that's probably some level as well.
Yeah, that was the thing about Karofsky in this episode. Every time that he's like not thinking about how much he hates himself, if you know what I mean, he looks so happy in such an innocent way. Like when he's dancing and stuff, and like, you know, when he's doing that, I'm not saying, oh, dancing will set him free. He doesn't even have to be that kind of person. But just when he's chilled out and not hating on himself and therefore hating on other people, he looks so, like, innocently happy, which kind of makes me sad, I guess. But then we
have... And I wonder how Kurt feels, like, looking at... So just, I want, it's just, it'd be interesting, like, to have a, like, a proper conversation after the fact all this happens, like, of Kurt, or, like, seeing how Kurt feels, like, seeing Krofsky out there dancing with everyone, and, you know, because I know there's a bit, like, beforehand, like, well, doesn't Finn tell me about this, but he doesn't actually get, like, the time to, like, show what he's feeling, so that would have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be very interested, you know, I would have been very interested to see all of the conversations that Kurt and Krofsky, you know, had in the other world in my head where they were kind of, like, lifelong weird friends and supporters of each other, which probably won't be the factual world given that they are making this stupid Blaine plot. But yeah, it would have been interesting, like, for, you know, 30-year-old Kurt and Krofsky to be like, so what were you thinking at that time, if you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, what was the deal with that? Like, and then, yeah, I don't know, would have been good. Anyway, so then we have the sort of final bit in which, you know, Finn gets a bit ahead of himself and kind of expects that, you know, given Karofsky's enthusiasm, you know, that, you know, he assumes Karofsky can join Glee Club and that, you know, stuff would be, you know, that he should go out and settle things with Kurt and then and all of that kind of stuff. So Finn, you know, always the optimist and idealist. And then Karofsky reacts again, like, totally terribly to that, basically. So why do you think that is, like, Mitch? Like, did you kind of, you know, his turnaround, basically, at the end of the episode? And do you think Finn was a bit delusional with what he was saying? Or do you think that Karofsky kind of, you know...
No. I think that Finn was very much in the right to say the things he was to Krofsky, and that development was there. Krofsky enjoyed that performance a lot. Schuster had even gone out on a limb and said, okay, I know you don't like this, but you're a really good performer. So I think that Finn was doing the right thing there, and it sucks. Sucks so much that Krofsky didn't just turn the leaf there, because he would have had so much more. I mean, I know that the writers had a different, you know, arc form going on, and as we'll see that in season 3, it's going to be very different from this moment right now, but it would have been nice in this alternative universe to see him kind of accept Finn's hand for help, and Finn's to me a leader in that he helps the lost. He's almost like a Jesus figure at times too, because of how he does it. I didn't mean to make that reference, but it kind of just happened. Yeah, he just, like, with Sam and everything too, like, you know, he's really good about kind of picking up the lost and the damned, and he lost one to the masses, I suppose.
Oh my god, beautiful metaphor.
I never thought I'd make a Jesus reference in Glee chat. Oh my god, we're not even on grilled cheeses.
Wow,
that's funny.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, my final thought about that is just that you know, it's just made me remember, like, how good he is, like, how good an actor and how well-developed a character he is, even just through the actor's work in a few scenes. And I don't know whether that's, like, down to really good writing, you know, every now and then, or if that's down to, like, the actor giving a lot of depth. But I'm now kind of excited for him to be in season 6, but still really, really, really annoyed. So we'll have to wait and see about that. A couple of other little aspects of this episode. We had the Blaine and Kurt aspect of basically they shoved a Warblers number in this episode for no reason at all, except that it was literally that people were demanding it. That was what it was. I remember at the time. It was literally there was not meant to be a Warblers number, and Warblers fever was like Beatlemania, and people were like, you can't not have a Warblers number in the Super Bowl episode. You have to do it. And so they just shoved one in with no meaning whatsoever. But we had a little, like, kind of, you know, tie into, you know, our regionals number's going to be so good, like, little coffee with, you know, Mercedes and Rachel, which was cute, and, like, Blaine and Kurt's, you know, ongoing developing, you know, friendship/partnership, which was nice. So I guess, yeah, did you guys kind of like the fact that the Warblers were in this episode? I liked Blaine as a character in this episode, like him kind of being the character, you know, with the little bit of advice and the coffee scene. But did you guys like the Warblers number being in this episode?
It's not the best Warblers song, but it was enjoyable. I mean, I don't understand, like, the high pitch, like where the guy touches his ear and he makes
ding 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 ding.
Is that him or is that like?
It's so ridiculous.
I actually love this Warblers song. I think it's one of the best sounding for their, like, voices and stuff. But I think it's so pointless to be in this episode.
Heck, though.
Really, in this? I've heard him sing live a lot of times, and this is one of the ones that sounds the most like his natural voice to me.
I think, I don't know if it's auto-tune, but there's, like, definitely, like, a strange effect that I think is strongest in this song.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that they chose to do that, and I know that they've talked about it a bit on the show, or behind the scenes. They're like, yeah, we know that there are vocal effects on the songs. We try to replicate the vocal effects that were on the original songs, if you know what I mean. Like, they'll put effects on people's voices to match what the effects were on the original song's voices, which I get, but I also am like, they're singing in high school. Like, you could just not do that as well.
Well, I understand. You know what
I mean? I think the reference we always make is that Hungry Like the Wolf part. You probably know what I'm talking about, Nettle, just from me mentioning it, where it's... I don't like these moments too, and that's why I didn't like this song, Natalie. I tried really hard to
I always like this song, and
you know, it fits in the same beat. I think another reason is it fits in the same beat as the song that they're going to sing in Silly Love Songs, because it has just same, like the same kind of like rap singing feel, hip hop thing going on, and it's weird because I like that other one so much more. But I think it is really just that little like ding ding in the beginning that gets me.
I don't know about that. I don't really even know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about the guy in the beginning who like holds up to his ear.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'll go and rewatch it later.
Okay,
Hungry Like the Wolf. Sorry, I cut out for a bit there. Are you mentioning Hungry Like the Wolf? How?
Yeah,
Hungry Like the Wolf.
Oh, that's terrible. Let's not talk about that.
They address like Santana's like basement is going. It's like what the hell?
Jesus. Anyway, Like It or Hate It, Bills, Bills, Bills was there. I know a lot of people really like this song. Like, this is a lot of people's, like, favorite Warblers song, so I don't know about that. But anyway.
It's not great.
Is this... Who originally sings this song?
Destiny's Child.
I thought so.
Oh my god, are you serious?
No, I was gonna guess it, but then I was gonna be wrong, and then I'd hear that, so I'd rather just not guess in the first place at this point.
And then obviously the episode ends with the Finn and Quinn kiss, like, you know, oh, you were great this week, made me remember why I loved you. We'll talk about more on Finn and Quinn in the next episode, because, like, this is so unnecessary. It doesn't need to, like, I don't understand why they like each other in a romantic way again. Like, yeah, they're both powerful vamps. I don't care. Like, okay.
I would have liked to have seen more of, like, just Finn and Quinn's, like, friendship that we saw. Like, if this episode ended without the kiss, or without the romantic bit, it would have been perfect. Exactly. It would have been fine.
Like, I love them as, like, supporters and leaders together, but not like that. It's really dumb. But anyway. Yeah. And then, just in general, this episode had, in my opinion, really great writing and quotes and dialogue. Like, I thought it was really, really well done for that. Like, lots of little bits. Like, even when, you know, Puck and Finn make up and they're like, you know, he's like, you know, why did you sing that duet with Rachel then? And you kind of see that flashback to her storming and being like, I need you to sing this duet with me to make Finn jealous. Like, I love, and they just little, you get 20 seconds of coverage to make stuff make sense, if you know what I mean. Like, this is what I mean about the extended time. Imagine how annoying that Finn and Rachel, that Puck and Rachel duet would be if you didn't get that flashback. Like, imagine how annoying it'd be, like, why are they singing together?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? Didn't they just, like, have that cheating thing? Are they together now? Like, you would hate it if they didn't have that flashback. And it's just little, you can use 10 seconds so well in a TV show. You can use 10, 15 seconds to just make something better. And they really do a good job in this episode of that.
Yeah, so that was the representation of the fifth tip of the Pentagon, love Pentagon that we're in. Is it, am I still meant to believe that there's something simmering between Rachel and Puck because of that?
Not at all. No, not at all. That was the whole point. It was that, like, I actually really like Puck and Rachel as friends. Like, again, in the football game when he's like, are you ready for this to her? It's really cute. But I love Puck and Rachel as friends. I love Finn and Quinn as friends. Just leave it alone, guys. Like, it's really, really stupid. But no, it's just, the point of that was just, you know, to show that it was literally a convoluted thing between friends as opposed to a... you know, more of a Pentagon. But
right. But the Pentagon is Sam, Finn, Quinn, Puck, Rachel, right?
Oh, who knows?
I think those all fit together. I don't know. It's hard to follow the relationships, honestly. Because I'm not watching...
Yeah, this isn't news.
No. Yeah, I know. But because I'm not watching every episode and I don't have the encyclopedia mind of Jack, I often had to think who's together and why right now.
Yeah, I had to kind of research, like, my favorite stuff, like, for this. But...
Like, I didn't even know that Quinn and Sam were dating at this point. Isn't that silly? Because I don't think that we did the episode with Lucky in it, or perhaps I wasn't on that Glee chat.
No, we did do it.
No, I think... Yeah, that was the one I didn't get to go on. Yeah, so that's kind of like the solidifying moment of the relationship for me, and I didn't see it, so I was just like, they're dating? What?
It does always... The Quinn and Sam thing does always fall a bit flat, but we'll go into that in the next episode. Favorite long-forgotten or memorable moments for this? We all talked about the girls playing football in various sources, so I'm just going to mention a couple of other ones quickly before we talk about the girls playing football, because I want to talk about that with all of us. But a couple of the ones that I'd forgotten that were amazing were Beast, like, singing along in Need You Now. Like, she's so, like, loving and cute, and I love her. And then
Sweet. I feel like that was more Dot Mary Jones.
Yeah, probably. She's so cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. Puck being defensive of the Glee Club, like, right at the start as well. Like, when he's all like, I'm going to go all TikTok on your face. And just how much he cares and how defensive he is. I love that. And again, his end scene as well. Like, he's just a great, great character. And then the extended scene of, like, Sue's rage fit, which, yeah, it's overdone. So and we've funny. Seen it done so many times. But, oh, my God, it was so funny when Will goes, like, when it cuts away and Will goes to explain to Beast and then she comes in freaking...
Oh, that was good.
So well-paced.
Perfect time.
So yes. funny. Yep. So good.
And the music, that so the opera music that always plays is just perfect.
It's so good. It's the best. And then it just died. It was so good. But let's all talk about the girls playing football, which was a big deal to all of us, it seems. I'll go first because it was just chronologically... My probably favorite moment was when the girls tell, like, the club that they're going to join the team, basically, and Rachel's kind of announcing them and announcing it. And it's one of those moments of Leah Michelle's that seems almost ad-libbed when she's like, when you snap the ball, we're all just going to lie down on the ground. We're going to lie there. And just the way that she does that, I'd totally forgotten about it. And I forgot how funny it was good. And then Zyces' reaction as well, like being like, I'm going to. I think this is a quote because it's just the whole scene, but like, oh, it's so funny. But then
what about that other moment too with Rachel in the makeup room, and she was kind of just yammering about like, yeah, I took a makeup class before, I'm like really good at makeup, and I was like, that's so Leah.
there was a lot in this episode that seemed really ad-libbed, like when they were doing the when they were doing the zombie makeup on the boys, that was really natural as well. I really liked that, and it was unusual. But yeah, Jack, what was your football moment?
Well, I was, Zyces as well, but I thought I'd talk about another aspect of it. It was when, like, specifically when the four girls are walking, like, on the oval, and then there's Rachel just, like, looking up with the biggest grin on her face.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she loves the spotlight. It's so funny.
Yeah! Like, they're all like, and she's like, yay! It's so good.
Now that's actually, in the Facebook page, I posted that photo like a few weeks back, I think, asking what episode we should recap because I love it so much.
Oh, it's so cute. And as I said, Rachel. I really like Puck grabbing her helmet and being like, you're gonna go for this, and they're just like,
it's so cute.
Obviously Tina, she has a bit of a moment as well.
She nearly dies.
What happened to her? What happened to her medically? Was she just so, like, shocked from the impact that she just had to quit?
I don't know.
Like, her body was just like, I imagine that the air got knocked out of her and she couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
That's a horrible feeling when that happens. You feel like you're dying. But then the fact that she's like, are we winning? Is like, you know, so cute.
What you just said then, Mitch, reminded me of, like, Legend of Korra, when how, like, the guy, when Zahir, like, sucks the air out of, like, the Earth Queen. That's what you did maybe remind me of then.
Rewatchable listeners, don't listen to that part.
Oh my god, that won't mean anything to any of them at all. Like, none of those names are going to mean anything, but... Mitch, did you have a particular moment of the football or the rest of the episode that you wanted to mention as well?
Yeah, it was really just Zyces just like, I'm going to kill everyone!
Yeah.
It was so cute.
I just love her. She's so good.
I know. Did we actually see her tackle anyone? I hope we did.
I don't know. I can't remember. But
at the very start, she slams into someone really hard.
Oh, that's good. And I didn't know football. Okay. As American as I am or am not, I did not know in football you could tackle someone that doesn't have the ball. Because at one point, they're just like, get number 22! And then, like, Finn tackles the person. And I'm just like, but they were just running. Like, you can do that? Like, murder them? It was so violent.
I don't know the rules exactly. But yeah, you're certainly...
I thought that was against the rules, and I was like, this is a lot more of a violent sport than I remembered. Holy crap.
I think you're meant to block people who are trying to get the ball. If person A has the ball, you know, person A's teammate can knock out person B who's trying to get person A, if you know what I mean. I don't know.
This is fabulous. I love it. I love that we have two Australians and one American, all very into musical theater, trying to produce some knowledge about football.
American football. We don't even play the same type of football here.
I can tell you about AFL. I know a lot about AFL, but not.
Well, when you say football, are you referencing American soccer, or are you referencing an actual game of football?
Football.
Like American football, I should say.
A rugby-based football game.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to tell you about all the different types of football, but yeah, we play a couple of types. We also don't wear pads, like American football. American football is the only one that wears pads. But we play a contact sport that's relatively similar to... Well, it's closest thing it is to is rugby, basically, which is also another, you know, rugby football, which is another game, like an oval-shaped ball, you know, similar to what you call football. AFL, Australian Rules Football, is the closest thing that we have to American football, except it's played completely without pads. And it's a contact sport as well, like tackle.
I've always seen lacrosse as being somewhat similar, too. And is that popular in Australia that would be...
No, literally no one in Australia has heard of lacrosse unless they watch Teen Wolf. Like,
oh, really?
Not at all. Yeah. But, yeah, lacrosse also very violent. But anyway, we won't go into the rules of football because I don't really understand them. Okay, so we'll go through the favourite quotes as well. Jack, did you want to go first with yours for quotes?
Yeah, so mine was a Sue quote because she was on fire this episode. I loved her so much. It's when she's talking to Brittany about going into the cannon and stuff, and she goes, "You don't climb in that cannon, and the routine will be all boom, boom, and no pow." And that Brittany is so 2000 and late.
Oh my
obviously,
God,
that's reference
so
to the Black Eyed Peas. Song. It's just so funny. Whenever I hear that song, I always think of Sue. It's so funny to me.
Jesus. I had a... Mitch, did you want to go with yours next and explain it?
Yeah, so... I always seem to get these kind of quotes, and I realize after that I'm just starting a theme here, that mine was just Quinn's, "Wow, this is actually kind of hot," during the Sam and Finn scuffle at the... kissing booth or whatever, and she's just so damn sexy. And I would even go as far as...
Mitch, are you sure that's not the next episode?
No, I said kissing booth, but they're not the kissing booth. They're just fighting over something else.
Oh, when they're yelling at the... Yeah, when Sam comes up and says,
"Why are you yelling at my girlfriend?"
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I remember.
Totally meld those plots together. Regardless, yeah. my focus was on this big reveal. You've heard it first on Glee Chat, whatever episode we're on. I was about to say, if there was one woman in this world I would go straight for, it is Diana. I really would. I think she's that beautiful. I think she's that sexy and just... Everything about her is just so awesome. The way she sings, dances, acts, I just can't get enough of her. And it's funny that I didn't have this love as much for her until we started our rewatches. But, like, seeing her and, like, you know, "Set me free, why don't you?" Like, that kind of started the love up until, like, these little moments that she has. Like, this line where she'll just, like, give this one, like, super, like, hiddenly sexy motive in it. It's just, I love it. I love her character. I love the actress. So that's my Quinn rant.
Mitch, I think like what everything you literally just said is a conversation I've had many times with like my best friend who, if she would turn lesbian for Diana Agron, that's like the main like. So everything you said was pretty much identical.
Really?
I've heard before.
We have to be best friends. I have to talk to her. That'd be so much fun.
I think that's a good idea. You guys might like both die like of like Diana.
Oh, she just... I watched, what is that movie? I don't even remember the name of it. It was I Am Number Seven.
The Romantics.
I Am Number Seven.
Oh, I Am Number Seven.
I watched it for her.
I'm Number Four.
Number Four.
Number Four, yeah.
Okay, so that movie was not to my tastes, but she is so cute in it. It makes the movie. Like I had this like just love for every piece of art that she touches now. I just can't get enough of her. Jack, really, hook me up with your friend, because we're going to be, like, best friends instantaneously.
Well, and she's in Sam Smith's new music video for I'm Not the Only One, which is actually a fantastic song. If you don't know that song, go listen to it. But she's she gets, like, fucked over bad in that video clip.
Do you mean
what
literally?
Do you mean, like, beat up or something? Like,
whoa.
No, like, cheated. Like, it's all about cheating stuff.
Sad,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's
very sad.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start, like, I don't know. Do you guys ever get so into an actor that you decide that you're going to
go and check out every song and movie and TV appearance that they've done.
I was like that with Mark Salling for a while there.
Really?
Mark Salling hasn't even done anything else.
Yeah.
Like, you mean his music?
Yeah, I know. Like, that's why I was looking. Yeah, like music and things like
that. I've definitely watched back catalogues of people. Like, look, well, I was just about to say, my partner's favourite two male and female actors, pretty much, you know, as a bisexual, are Diana Agron and, as of the last year or so, Sebastian Stan. And they used to
Whom
date.
Is he?
Are you serious?
Stop, guys. If I ask a question, it's because I legitimately don't know. I'm not stupid.
But he's literally the biggest person on the internet of 2014. He played Bucky. He played the Winter Soldier in Captain America.
Oh, okay.
But he's literally the internet's biggest crush of 2014. Like, if you go on Tumblr,
is he Tumblr? I'm not. So that's the thing, though. I'm not really Tumblr active.
The biggest person on the internet of 2014. Like, not of the mainstream of internet culture. He is the number one internet boyfriend of this year. But he was also in Once Upon a Time. He was in Gossip Girl. He's been in a lot of really bad movies.
You just connected that with me. He is in Gossip Girl. That's so strange.
He was in a fantastic series called Political Animals. And anyway, talking about back catalogs, we've been watching Sebastian Stan's back catalog this year. But him and Diana used to go out. They used to date for
quite
a while.
That's a really hot couple.
Yeah, in 2009 or 10 or 2010-ish. And yeah, so the fact that they used to go out and they're like my partner's favorite boy and girl is like quite difficult for her.
That's funny.
I know that's a struggle. It's like, how do you decide if that's a good or bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. But it also shows that they're both really cool people because they're both very chill, very like non-celebrity lifestyle.
Is Diana? Because I've only ever read one interview. I remember, I think from 17 magazine of when she was first getting into Glee, and I just I think that was the first moment I can really pick out that I was like, oh my god, she's awesome. Where she was like, my car broke down. They told me to go buy a hair straightener, and then I did that, and then I sang my song, and I was so exasperated, and I got the part, and I didn't even care at the end of the take. I was so tired.
That is true, but I don't know.
She's got great taste in music as well.
She's cool. She's very indie. She's she goes to a lot of concerts of music that I like. She's quite involved with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and his whole making art, creative art website thing. And she's really cool. And anyway, we like Diana.
I'll have to explore some more, and it's going to be fun.
Cool. Anyway, we'll go on quickly to the list of songs in this episode, just if any opinions. I Need You Now, that Lady Antebellum. God, I'd forgotten how big this song was at the time. Jesus Christ.
I don't know why they thought this would be a good song to choose to, show them how cool Glee Club would be.
Because it was huge at the time. It was freaking gigantic. Yes, it was number one for so long. And I think they just wanted to put. It's not a good song for them to show how cool of, the football players how cool it is. But it was a good song for them to do for the Super Bowl episode, which was whatever. As I said, I would have hated this if you hadn't had that flashback scene of Rachel being you've got to do this with me to make Finn jealous because it was funny. She's Not There by the Zombies, warm-up number for the zombie dance, which, did you guys like that one or not like it?
Well, the Encyclopedia Mind of Jack probably knew that this was the Zombies song. I didn't remember that after I'd listened to it so many years, only seeing on my iPod the Glee cast. So I've always thought this song was so out of context. Now I kind of get it.
Well, I think they say it in the episode. He said,
No, they do. They definitely go back and say, oh, yeah, that was a good Zombies number.
You killed it on that Zombies classic.
That completely erased from my mind.
And I just need to shove it in there to make sure. Well, it was pretty heavy-handed, Mitch, in terms of them say they were Will's you had to you kind of nailed it on that Zombies classic, just so we know why this isn't totally out of context. They kind of did do that, but
I don't know anything about
this. Zombie by the Cranberries.
Yeah, there's not much opportunity to dance in that one though, is there?
I'm not familiar with the Zombies as a group, so that could be also some of why I was not really identifying with the song.
That's quite old, it's maybe
I've no idea who the Zombies are.
Oh, you don't, Jack? Usually you know about, everything past, the 90s up to, 60s, I thought.
I know a lot, but, Natalie, were the Zombies that big? I honestly had no idea anything. I don't even have the original.
A couple of songs, Time of the Season and She's Not There, they were kind of a They were like a pop rock band of the 60s. There were a lot of them, and most of them only had like one or two songs that are like, you'd see them in old, you'd hear their songs mainly in old like 60s movies, if you know what I mean.
Sort of like the Easy Beats, like Friday on My Mind or something.
Yeah, like that,
like
that kind of thing. It's, you don't know the band properly, yeah, but the songs are in like a lot of things.
So then what an odd choice for this audience or anything at all. This was one of the moments.
They just wanted to stick in a zombie reference of some kind. Yeah.
But that's so stupid because there's so many better songs, and I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I know there are that they could have done that were referencing like the undead or just something. Like Thriller was an obvious one there, but I don't know. That really was just silly because I don't know what audience member enjoyed that song for its original owner or you know, composers or.
I thought it sounded and looked really cool. As a number, I thought it was a good. I actually quite like when Glee does that. Like, I quite like when they do a song that's not necessarily like, oh, we're excited because they're singing that song that I know. Like, I quite like it when they manage to own a song that isn't that well known. This is pretty well known in the wider world, but for the Glee audience, it's not that well known. But
Natalie, I agree that it's nice when they do that. I don't like that they did this for their Super Bowl episode. This is the, I think, the strongest moment I could pick out that.
I think that.
Well, I think I see the point.
People, like going to be much bigger range of audience, like, you know, man football fans. They might have liked some 60s rock bands, etc. Like, I reckon that it is quite good to be diverse like that for this episode. But I don't know. Well, it is a bit of a random one.
Well, the point I thought you were going to make was to say that Glee should show its true colors and not fit to any, like, oh, I know that song, it's popular now, and I'm singing it on Glee thing, where they could say, like, no, we do random songs on Glee, and you can enjoy it for that, too, because this is what it's really like. We're not just putting on, like, a face just because we're the Super Bowl episode right now. And if that was their you know, motive, I can appreciate the song more.
I don't know. I think that it, you know, I think that the mix of songs in this episode were like a good representation of what Glee can do. But
that's a good statement, though. I agree with that.
Obviously, we've already talked about Bills, 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 and how it was sort of pointless and weird.
But good, but bad. It,
yeah, I don't know. Very strange. Just random, strange that just... it was there.
It's even more rated than the zombie song, we'll give you that much.
And then, obviously, Thriller mashed up with Heads Will Roll by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, which this number is so good and cool. It always makes me laugh when, like, they, like, put in, like, a classroom discussion or, like, a person saying, oh, we're going to do this song by a band, and the band is, like, maybe a band that... You know, there's been very few bands that Glee have done that I haven't known, but, like, a band that maybe people wouldn't know and that they talk about it like everyone knows. Like, when they were like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do Candles by Hey Monday. And then, you know, Kurt's like, oh, I never thought you were so, like...
Top 40, yeah.
Yeah, top 40 or whatever.
I thought you were top 40, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, there's, like, when they talk about it, like, everyone knows who Hey Monday is, or when they talk about it, like, everyone knows who the Yeah Yeah Yeahs in 2000 and whatever, like, I'm like, I definitely know who the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are, I definitely know who Hey Monday are, I've seen both of those bands live, the general public does not, and I love when they talk about it, like I say love in inverted commas, when they talk about it, like, it's, like, a common thing, like, everyone's, like, cheering, like, yay, we all love the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. If that whole Glee club loved the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, it would be a very, very different club. Just saying. Sorry.
Yeah, if they love that kind of music, like, different, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very accurate, because I do consider myself more of a mainstream fan of all types of music, and I'd never heard of, for instance, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, but, I mean, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, they're a very cool, I don't even know what genre band I would call them, you know, rock, kind of psychedelic rock, contemporary, like currently touring, very extreme, like a little bit glam, like crazy outfits and stuff like that, and
they're really current.
Dark music. They're current, yeah. Maybe not 2014 current, but like 2005 current, kind of. Like,
my interpretation interpretation from your description from... I don't know, like this one little thing that Santana shouts out, "Heads will roll," is kind of they seem like a mix between Paramore and Panic for some reason to me. Am I right on that?
Not at all.
I don't know. No, I have to listen to a song by them.
Both of those bands are like emo genre. Both of those bands are like American emo genre, and Yeah Yeahs are like cool. Like, not that I mean, I'm very into the American emo genre. I, like, worked on tours with, like, both, not both of those bands, but, like, bands on the same labels as both of those bands. Hey Monday is in that genre. Hey Monday is on the same label as both of those bands.
Hmm.
But Yeah Yeah Yeahs are, like, they're, like, more, like, indie rock. Like, they're kind of, like, I don't even know what I'd compare them to, really. But, no, they're not that. I wouldn't even class them in the same.
No, I understand. Indie rock can be kind of hard to classify with
another
band. I don't
know what I would...
It's almost like those are just, like, I don't know, the Hufflepuffs of the musical world or something.
Like, no,
not in a bad way, just to say, like, it's just hard to classify them. I don't know.
Do you, like, I don't even know how I would... Yeah, Wikipedia says indie rock. I couldn't really tell you more than that. It's a girl singer, really, is like, kind of screamy, psychedelic. Like, the way Santana sings Heads Will Roll, it's... She's very close to Karen O's voice.
Oh.
Like, well, that's good,
I thought that was just, like, a Santana-specific moment, and
no,
I think that I would appreciate...
No, that's very close to how the original song sounds.
Well, that's good, because I feel like I would appreciate the original song, because that's so, like, out there and wild that I might get into it.
And, yeah, they're just a sort of unusual band. Anyway, moving on from that. did you guys, like the number in general, the Thriller Heads Will Roll?
I loved it.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
This was the big production number.
Even watching it, like, the 10th, 20th time, like, again, it's still so cool to watch.
It's really good, yeah.
How about Artie's zombie makeup? That needs a shout-out.
All of the zombie makeup is amazing.
Surprisingly, too, because you wouldn't expect Glee to be so good with, like, dead creature makeup. Like, what experience would anyone on this crew have with that, right?
They must have a lot of costume and makeup and stuff like that. Like, I think that they've... You know, I think that anyone who's been through makeup school, like, enough to, like, get a job working on a high-profile TV show, even if all they're doing is usually putting on like, mascara and blush, that they know how to do special effects makeup.
Like, oh, they were probably itching with their fingers to, like, you know, get out the bloody guts and stuff.
They probably had the best time ever, like, doing that.
You can tell. It came through. I mean, that's why I love everything about this performance, because it felt like everyone involved, like, from the ground up, was so into it. And that's when I was going back to, like, Diana and that one little moment she has where she's just, like, so creepy. It's just every single cast member and everything. And it's just so cool. It's so cool. There's nothing more to describe this number, I think. We've all loved it.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So we'll move into episode 212. We're skipping right into Silly Love Songs, which was the Valentine's Day episode, which had a few plots about various couples. Which is a really, really fun episode. The first one we have is the Puck and Lauren couple, where Puck has decided that he has fallen for Lauren Zices, and that he wants to go out with her. She doesn't make it super easy on him because Santana doesn't really know what she's doing with herself, basically, at this point. So she basically... goes all crazy about Lauren and crazy about everyone and is just very destructive and overdramatic in this whole episode. To start off, we have Puck, having a crush on Lauren, and we get a bit of Lauren, you know, ourselves that we kind of like in terms of, what her personality's like, you know, what she's, you know, defensive about, what she's confident about, what she's not confident about, and all of that kind of stuff. So to start with, I guess, Jack, I know you're a fan of Zices, are you not? I believe.
Yeah, I love Zices.
Yeah. Tell me why you love Lauren Zices.
She just is, like, a really, really different, like, character, and has, like, a really different, like, humor style on the show, which is, like, refreshing.
Yeah.
Like, because you can bring in a character that doesn't do much, but she, like, doesn't do much, but she, what she does is funny, and yeah, I like how it's, yeah, she's a good character.
Yeah. Mitch, did you like her at the time or now? Like, have you had any opinion change on her, or do you just like her, hate her, hated her, like her now? Any thoughts?
Maybe Sue being a 1 and Quinn being a 10, Zexy's probably falls into about, like, a 7.5, because mm-hmm. I usually get her, and she's usually funny to me, but there are little moments where I just don't understand her motivations, and it's hard for me in the moment to, like, think of, like, I know when we're going through that I'll find one or two, but just some of the ways she interacts with Puck, with, like, the way she treats him, I don't like, because when she's, like, get out of the library before
I changed my mind kind of stuff. Like, I don't know if I appreciate that about her, but I don't know where it's coming from. So that's why I can't give her a full 10, like, I love her that much. But she does crack me up a lot. I don't understand what's going on, you know? It's just, Xyces is a really complex fortune cookie that I have yet to crack open.
Okay. Well, that's fun. I think that Puck, you know, I think one of the biggest things about Puck is that he hasn't spent a long time examining why he feels the things he feels. So basically the approach we have is, you know, that Puck, you know, tries to get with Lauren, you know, he tries to ask her out, you know, in various ways. At first he's kind of like, hey, you know, you're definitely going to want to go out with me, right? I'm cool. And she's, you know, and she's maybe not like someone who gets a lot of people asking her out, you know, because he makes that assumption. And, you know, she kind of knocks him back, and, you know, regardless of whether she has had, you know, people asking her out or not, she doesn't, you know, like him. His first approach was that, which is that she'd automatically be happy to do that. You know, he kind of is interested in the fact that she kind of, wasn't into him when they made out, like, you know, that she challenged him basically. But it takes him the whole episode to figure out that that's why he likes her, that he, you know, to say that to her, that, you know, that he likes her because she is, you know, pretty hardcore and challenging and, you know, doesn't let him get away with stuff and that kind of thing. And as opposed to just, you know, I like you and you should appreciate it, basically. And he does come around to it eventually, but he comes to it through a few, you know, approaches of, like, you know, attempting to ask her out and, you know, singing the love song in class to her of Fat Bottom Girls by Queen, which, you know, it's this performance is really weird to me because at the start of it, everyone, including Will, is just like, what the hell? This is so wrong. And then by the end of it, everyone is into it, except Lauren, obviously, because she is offended by it. And also Santana, because she is offended that Puck likes Lauren. So I guess, first of all, with that performance of Fat Bottom Girls, has anyone got any explanation as to why everyone started out being like, oh my God, what are you doing? And ended up like just not caring that it was gross and just dancing because, anyway, because
it's because that song kicks so much ass. Like, it just as a song,
it does sound like, so good.
It gets everyone like excited. And I think that like I think Puck, because like Xyces is so assertive and so like seems to be so like okay with her body, I think that like Puck thought that it would be okay to sing this.
But yeah, he thought it would be appreciated. He understood
that, but I didn't think that everyone else thought that it would have been appropriate. But because like he was having so much fun, the guys were sort of like okay. They thought, oh, Xyces must be okay with this because Puck is like doing something so absurd. But then so everyone's like, yeah. But then that's not how it went at all.
Yeah, it was so weird. But yeah, I think that you have a good point in the thinking that Puck, as I said, he doesn't really know much about what he thinks, like, until he sits down and thinks about it. And you know, but you're probably right in that he thinks that, you know, number one, he's quite naive, but number two, that he thinks, like, you know, if, you know, Lauren is you know, fine about herself, that she won't be offended, that she'd kind of take it as a good thing or whatever, which I don't know, man. It's like it's very difficult ground, because obviously she was not happy about it. And I think that one of the things that's important to kind of note is that people don't want to be wanted for their body or in spite of their body. So this discussion about, you know, about the kind of marginalizing of groups or races that's, you know, in terms of Lauren and in terms of anything, we are going to discuss this in a lot more depth, which you can listen to at the end of the episode, because we want to take it out of the main discussion so that we don't interrupt the flow, and also in case anyone is triggered by the kind of conversations about any sort of race or prejudice, in terms of basically people, as we've just mentioned, sort of fetishizing a group or liking someone in spite of a group. It's a pretty frank discussion, and when, you know, we're not all, you know, social justice experts or anything like that, but it's an opinionated discussion about about that. So if you want to hear us talk about that, you can go to the end of the episode. Otherwise, we'll go on to the next point now. The next relationship in this episode that had a Valentine's plot was Kurt and Blaine, where we're starting to see more scenes of Kurt at Dalton and the dynamic with the Warbler meetings, which are a bit absurd and hilarious and stuff like that. Basically this plot line involved, you know, Blaine having a crush on someone, you know, who's going to sing to, you know, all of this kind of thing. And then Kurt kind of gets it into his head that it's him and he finds out it's not. And then they all go and serenade the guy at the Gap. And just a few thoughts about this is that this is why people thought Klein would be good. Let me tell you, because Kurt's behavior in this episode is really healthy. It's really, he's very honest with himself when he works out. Like he kind of, you know, after a couple of days, like until he talks to Kurt, and he's got a crush. He gets caught up in it. That's fine. He talks to Kurt, you know, Mercedes and Rachel, and he realizes that he's like deluding himself. Basically, he's like, he literally says, "I made the whole thing up in my head, didn't I?" And he admits that. Then he goes to the, you know, he helps Blaine. He supports Blaine. He's like, "Go get him. He's gonna love you." He supports Blaine in his endeavors, even though he likes Blaine. He's completely selfless about helping his friend who he likes. He's very honest with himself. He's then very honest with Blaine at the end of the episode about what he thought was going on. And they have a great, healthy friendship with the potential of romance, where Blaine had not even realized that, you know, Kurt was a possibility. He was, you know, he admits he's a little bit delusional about relationships, about romance. You know, he made the whole thing up with Jeremiah, and he said, even though I don't know why that guy was going for coffee with him twice if he knew Blaine was illegal. So let's not go there. But, and I was just so impressed and annoyed. I was like, why did people ship Klein? This is why people shipped Klein. This had the makings of an incredibly healthy relationship, but it did not unfold that way. So, yeah, just Jack and Mitch. I'll go to Mitch first. Like, what did you think of basically the Kurt and Blaine plot in this episode? Like, either of the characters or how they talk to each other or anything like that?
Definitely. And I had to get this one thought out of the way that is relevant to what you were talking about. Why would he go to coffee with Blaine if he knew he was underage? There's an indie movie that Ellen Page starred in called Hard Candy. I'll leave it at that. If you know what I'm talking about.
God.
I'll leave it at that. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
Ellen Page movie. And
I'm familiar with Hard Candy.
Yeah. It's that idea. Okay. So anyways, Also, I'm kind of still stuck on that, on whatever his name was in the Gap shop, because Kurt says something to him that I didn't appreciate, where he says, "I think that they know because of your hair that you're gay."
It was so funny, but it was so mean.
I was like, that's not nice.
It was funny, yeah.
He was just like, "I think just with the hair, I think they know." Oh, it was so funny. It was terrible.
I didn't even find it funny. I was just like, Kurt, total bitch moment. Shut up. He just got fired because you sang in his store. Why would you tell him something like that? That's just horrible. Yeah. So, and that whole thing just made me feel like he was just trying to get revenge. And I don't see where that's a good thing in Klein, because he was very vengeful toward the guy in that line, and that stuck out like a sore thumb to me. And I don't like. Oh, I hate saying these words too, because I know that's such a hot button thing. I don't like Klein. It's so hard for me to like Klein.
No one likes Klein anymore, but like.
But here they did. That's the thing.
I liked Klein at this point. I did not. I will say I did not take that line to Jeremiah as like any kind of revenge. Like, I think it was just. No. Kurt. I'll get into this in a second, because I think Kurt is actually at this point in Glee his kind of his truest self. I'll talk about that in a moment. But I think that I think that he was just basically being himself. I don't think it was any kind of revenge. I think it was just his personality, which isn't that nice. I mean, his personality isn't that great, but I don't think it was revenge. But Jack, how about you? Like, I know that you, when we first met Blaine in a couple of episodes ago in our flashback, you were kind of forgotten that you liked him at this point. Like, what did you think of this episode? And I guess both Blaine's kind of strange delusions and then Kurt's kind of crush on him and how that was handled.
Well, it's not that I forgot that I liked Blaine. I know that I liked Blaine a lot, but it's like refreshing just to see what, like, watch the episodes when I did. Yeah. And with Klein now, I did ship Klein. Like, I really did like them, and I think it's just because like the dynamic in this episode was really good between them. And like Kurt was sort of being a little bit dick, but he wasn't like being overly manipulative because he didn't like the situation, which was nice to see for a change.
Yeah, like, he didn't screw anything up. He didn't, like, wasn't out to get for himself. Like, even, you know, even when they were together, Kurt, like, you know, put himself first and, like, messed up, not messed up stuff for Blaine, but, like, you know, tried to stop Blaine doing things. Whereas this, like, once he kind of realizes that he's not the person that Blaine was, you know, he goes along and he supports and he helps him to the best of his ability. And it's just really, like, you know, I'm not saying that Kurt has to be, like, you know, selfless and trodden all over by Blaine either, but, you know, this is good. This is healthy and nice, and it ends in a really good place. And yeah, I'm like, this is like, no, like, this is huge ship. Like, why wouldn't you ship this at this point? But it really, really did not turn into something nice.
Maybe so. It was the healthy undertones, to answer your rhetorical question, that I saw that this time around, maybe not shipping, because the first time around I shipped it. Mm-hmm. Nothing stopped me. You know, it was the gay ship on Glee, and that was all I needed. I kid you not. I mean, as funny as it is, I do feel that might have been the perspective, I wouldn't know, but that may have been the perspective of a lot of shippers of Klein. I mean,
yeah, I think so.
Because, I mean, this was very representative, as I know we've talked at length, you know, for what cable TV could or couldn't do with gay people on TV. So that was a big deal, and that's why it's so hard to try and convince people who are into, or not try and convince, but inform them why Klein's unhealthy. Just because it's the gay ship on Glee, the original, whatever, groundbreaking as it was, doesn't mean that it was that healthy. And that's tough. It's tough news to break, because it's almost easy to slip into that. Every once in a while I catch myself, you know, in their little coffee scenes, almost getting back into them. But then it's just like, it's little stuff like how Blaine doesn't seem to be into him in the beginning that really just, it cuts me short right there. I don't get why Kurt would still go after him so strongly. And I agree with you, Natalie, that that Kurt was his most true when he was, you know, all to Blaine, like, okay, so we're singing duets, it's kind of cutesy, what's going on? That was good. But then Blaine still didn't seem interested after that. He was just like, I don't know what's going on, this is too confusing, just leave me alone. Like, I just don't think that's the makings of an uneven relationship. And that's where I feel, like I said, Blaine gets cut short.
I mean, okay, there's a couple of perspectives there, because, and I'm not going to, like, fly my flag for defending Klein, but I think that there's a couple of things there. I think that, number one, the amount of relationships where both people fall for each other in the very same instance is pretty small. Like, that, you know, even if they both secretly have a thing for each other or whatever, it's not like it's, like, timed up perfectly. Sometimes people need a second to catch up, if you know what I mean. Like, and that's acceptable to me. That being said, you know, and I sort of always headcanoned this, that when, like, Blaine met Kurt, that he was already kind of hung up on this Jeremiah guy, if you know what I mean. Like, that wasn't, like that it was relatively, you know, his head was already sort of there, and he hadn't kind of noticed Kurt like that. There's also a couple of other things. Number one, the way that he kind of reacts to Kurt when, you know, Kurt tells him, it's not like, oh, sorry, buddy, I'm letting you down, if you know what I mean. In my opinion, it's not that. In my opinion, it is much more like it was just something that he hadn't really processed was like a possibility, and then he just sort of looked at it in a new light. But the biggest thing to me, which is the most important thing about Kurt and Klein and Dalton, is my last point here, which is that Kurt becomes more of himself over the next few episodes, basically. Like, while Kurt is at Dalton, he is relaxed, happy. Like, when Blaine meets Kurt, Kurt is a fragile mess. He's not himself, basically. He's vulnerable, fragile. He's not like, oh, I have a crush on this guy, he's so sassy and cool. He is a mess, basically. And he transfers to Dalton, and after a couple of episodes there, you kind of see him becoming, like, basically his best personality. Like, he's chilled out. He's very healthy about his opinions. Like, he is here. Like, he's very honest. He's very selfless. He's very strong about his thoughts. He is brave about telling Blaine what he thought. He doesn't even say, oh, I fancied you so much. He was just like, I thought that that's where this was sort of going. It's not like, oh, I like you and you don't like me. Even like that. He's very brave, very honest about his thoughts. You know, he's playful, like when he's doing the, silly love songs at the end, like he's innovative. Like, he actually really grows into himself, and he sort of I hate to use this word, but his like personality quote unquote blossoms. And it is actually really indicative when in original song we see him, even though it's like he's upset about the dead bird or whatever, and he's like wearing one of his like crazy outfits again instead of the Dalton uniform. And that's when Blaine kind of gets it. It's Blaine falls for Kurt when Kurt's personality is at the peak, basically, that it could be, as opposed to when it is, like, when he meets him, that he's a total mess and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and that he's, like, because we said at the beginning of the season, he's so withdrawn and, like, dead-eyed and all of that kind of thing. And so I kind of liked that. I always kind of liked that he didn't necessarily, like, he knew Kurt was, like, important and special and whatever, but he didn't, like, romantically like him for being, like, vulnerable and, like, you know, all of that kind of stuff. He started liking him once Kurt healed, basically, once Kurt started actually becoming, like, his best version of himself. And I really saw that in this episode. So I always really liked that. But anyway.
So what I find kind of difficult about the situation of who's falling in love with who and what is a difficulty that I've always faced as a gay man, in that there's a lot more pressure in my own life that I found to date quicker once you meet a gay man. And that's hard to overcome. It's hard to tell yourself, become a friend with them first. It's odd. I can't tell you where it's come from. It's felt like to me, it's been embedded in my mind that that's what gay men have to do because they're such a, you know, a minor group that once you find a gay person, you know, you better like them kind of deal. And that's why I think I'm finding it so difficult to see from Blaine's perspective, which isn't necessarily healthy, and I've known that for years, and you know have you know forced myself to the best of my ability to get over it and be friends first with another gay man before just jumping in and dating them, kind of like what Kurt wants, I suppose. But what Blaine presents is an interesting perspective because he's almost to me playing like the. And this isn't to associate with genders, more to associate with character archetypes. He is the best friend to the girl that doesn't realize that the girl has liked him that long. And then, like, the girl next door, and I'm thinking of Gossip Girl in particular, you know, when it just the girl reveals that all these years I've liked you, and then he kind of cues into it. And that's unique, and that's good for a gay relationship, because I like that that breaks that gender stereotype. So that's one thing about Klain that I appreciate and that I do think is good. So, yeah, Natalie, I do agree that, you know, people don't just like each other from the minute they start and see each other or whatever, and it's much... Well, I shouldn't say it's much healthier if you can develop into a friendship. Relationships go as they go, but this is... It's an interesting perspective because Kurt's pulling them into that relationship from the beginning, and the way I think I've described I felt toward other gay men when Blaine doesn't necessarily even see that perspective. He doesn't even consider it because I don't think he knows that perspective. He wasn't ingrained with that same feeling and that drive that I was just referencing in myself that I used to feel. So, yeah, it's... Yeah, that's another groundbreaking part of not only like TV, but just of almost gay culture to see that happening for me, because I don't know of any other icons or idols I found that, you know, broke that stereotype in my mind that, or that stigma that you date when you meet a gay man because you're so selected. And I don't know. Maybe Jack can appreciate where I'm coming from too, or Natalie, anyone else, like whatever you guys have going on in your lives, if you feel can associate with like a thought process you used to have?
Well, I think that just in terms of this, I think that one of the issues is Glee. You know, that's one of the issues people have had with the idea of, you know, Kurovsky, you know, Kurt and Blaine can only date each other, you know, and, you know, or like, you know, the dating of Kurovsky or something like that. Like, is that this whole like, oh, there's another gay character, must stick them together, if you know what I mean. Like, that it is yeah. that.
And that's hard. And, it's really hard to avoid.
Yeah, and I think that Kurt is probably going off that, like, oh, he's, you know, like, first gay guy I've met, better fall in love with him.
Right.
Blaine,
right.
we don't know too much about it, but we can piece together from, you know, what we learn about his history at his old school in a later season and what we learn... You know, he knows this Jeremiah guy, he goes to Dalton, etc. He probably knows a few gay guys, and he's not dating all of them, if you know what I mean. Like, he's known gay guys, he's been around other gay guys, and he's not dating all of them. He knows he just doesn't have to date the first gay that he sees, basically. So I feel like that he might not have that perspective, and therefore not necessarily, like, jump on Kurt immediately, whereas Kurt definitely has that perspective, because he's like, oh my god, cute gay guy who likes me, I must make him my boyfriend.
Oh yeah, so. That happened to me, actually. I can remember the specific instance. I came out of the closet, I went on MySpace, I found the first gay guy on the search in my area. God. Yes, I did. I was 14. Oh my god. And I talked to him for a day, and then we were dating, and he'd call me cute, and I never was familiar with a man calling a man cute, and it was just so enthralling to be called cute. Oh, you don't even know. It was I was such a Kurt. I really was such a Kurt. I fell in love with a stranger on the internet. Like, that's, I shouldn't say to that extreme. He had so many mutual friends with me that I knew he wasn't, you know, that creepy, but it's almost like Kurt is in a MySpace romance with Blaine, I guess. He doesn't really know about it, but from the moment he sees him, he falls in love.
I don't know. I understand, like, watching them now, it's just nice again, because I really enjoy their dynamic, and Kurt isn't, like, just being so manipulative, even though he doesn't like the situation that's, like, on hand. Like, when they're singing, he's not, like, he's not really participating.
Yeah, he's bummed. He's like, oh,
but he's, like, not being a dick about
it. He's not,
like,
taking it out on Blaine, like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He's not sabotaging Blaine's little sock trick or anything, you know? Like, it's...
Yeah.
What was the sock trick? Why was he holding those socks?
Because he's just like, you know, they've performed, and then he's like, I'd like to buy these socks, please.
Oh, you know, that's what that was meant to be.
Was it his stupid idea of being charmed.
And he wore the sunglasses. Is this the origin or the return of the sunglasses?
Return
from what?
The origin was Freegley.
Was who?
The sunglasses.
Yes.
Darren, the pink sunglasses.
Yes.
That's a thing he used to wear, like, before he was on Glee. That's a thing that was, like, he just had a lot of pairs of Wayfarers, and some of them were pink and some of them were yellow, and he used to wear them a lot, like, just in life. And he became sort of known for it, and, like, his Twitter icon was a picture of his pink sunglasses and his, like,
album cover,
I think. Like, so, yeah, like, it was... And then, yeah, they kind of just messed around with it in Glee because it was actually that well-known, like, if you know what I mean. Like, they started selling merch with it on it and stuff, so, yeah. Oh,
yeah, I think my brother has Darren Criss, whatever they call glasses, I don't know.
Wayfarers or fake Wayfarers.
Wayfarers, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I thought it was funny, too, because I think he saw him in How to Succeed and then bought them. I was like, oh. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move on from them. We have the Finn and Quinn issue, basically, where, you know, Finn and Quinn both kind of like each other again. Why? I don't really know, but they do. Finn sets up the kissing booth to get Quinn to kiss him again, you know, to convince her to mess around with him. Sam kind of gets all weird about it. You know, he suspects that they have a dynamic going on, and then, you know, he can't decide whether, you know, them not kissing or kissing is better. Eventually they go do the kissing at the kissing booth to prove that it's no big deal. And Sam is still whatever about it. But then at that moment they have some fireworks and agree to start cheating on Sam, basically. Then Santana decides to give them both mono and in order to prove this, because she just likes making people miserable if she's miserable. So this entire plot, I feel very sorry for Sam, and he's very perceptive. He's very, like, you know, he's sort of being jerked around, and I really like that he's like, I'm pretty, but I ain't dumb and stuff, and that's all very cute. But, yeah, Jack, what did you think of this? Like, why is this even happening, basically?
I don't know. Like, sort of like what we said in the previous episode we just recapped. Like, if that episode was to end, like, without the kiss, it would have been perfect, like, because I really like seeing Finn and
the
Quinn
Super Bowl,
just,
so, yeah.
Yeah, just, like, friends. And then I don't really care that Sam and Quinn break up, but I just don't like how they are going to break up this way. And like we said, it's just so uncomfortable for me to watch, like, cheating on TV and have it be so manipulative and well thought out that it just bothers me so much. Like, if they're at a party and they were drunk and they kissed, I'd be like, that's not great, but it's different, you know? Whereas, like, this is just so bad. Like, even happens in a few shows. Like, for example, How I Met Your Mother, one of the ladies who Ted dates, like, when she breaks up with her husband, then they get together. Even that is still makes me feel weird because it was still like a form of cheating beforehand. Like, I don't know. I just don't like seeing it on TV, like in any form.
Mm. No, I do agree with you. It is. I mean, it is pretty nasty, especially when it's like manipulated. I don't know. It's
yeah, because ultimately, like, you want to sit down and watch a TV show, and like if you're watching a TV show and you don't enjoy it, then why are you watching it? So that's the thing. I want to watch down and enjoy most aspects of Glee. Whereas, like, whereas cheating, I just don't enjoy it, so I just would rather not see it, you know?
Jack, didn't you just describe me? Where I always tell you, I'm like, why do I hate watch these shows? And it's funny, because I have sort of an answer to that, and I didn't think you meant for this, but it falls along the lines of, you stuck with it for all this time, you want to see it all out deal, and I think that's how many people feel about Glee. But as I was talking to you, Jack, about all the shows that I won't name that I hate watch, that Glee is the one that I least hate watch, because contrary to popular belief, I like the fact that songs are in this show, and that makes the plot. That's fun to me, and then I know that I should say some people don't like that aspect of Glee, but I mean, I'm not hate watching it at this point, but sorry for that caveat. You just struck that chord with me, Jack. I thought that was funny, because we always talk about that together.
Yeah.
I don't know, Mitch, about this, the Quinn and Finn plot, though. Do you have sort of anything on that? Like, do you like it? Do you dislike it? Like, I just don't like it myself, but, yeah.
Well, see, as we were talking about with Clean, how I was, what stuck out as a sore thumb was the Gap guy. What stuck out here was Santana, and it was I need explanation to understand what was going on in Quinn and Finn to understand why Santana came to school in her sexy nurse costume to then spread them out to prove that they were kissing. Why does this matter that much to her? Like, is she just bored? What's going on? This is such an important thing.
So.
All right. And then why is she, I guess she just is looking for attention and going to school dressed like that? I don't know. Like, it was just such a weird thing to tie it in with the fact that, as we've talked about, I felt uncomfortable with the cheating, and it made me even more sad to see that Glee was trivializing something as important as mono, because mono, I don't know if it can kill you, but it can really disable you for a while, and it kind of played it off as like this cheeky, silly thing that happens to cheaters, and I was like, no. My own sister had mono and was down for like a month. It's kind of a scary thing. So I don't like anything of how Quinn and Finn were dealt with. I don't like their I don't like the universe's or Santana's repercussion on them. I do like their chemistry. I can say that much, and I agree that they have fireworks, and it's also one final point. Really interesting to me that we were meant to see Finn and Rachel last scene together, yet he never had fireworks with her, only with Quinn. That's meant to be very significant.
Well, no, I think that he was just caught up in the moment, and like sometimes it's just like anticipation and stuff like that. Like, I don't think that it was meant to be. I think they just played in the fireworks thing because they wanted to use the stupid song. Like, I really...
It is a stupid song, isn't it?
It was, I'm sorry. Like, she was so pretty in it, but it didn't make sense. It was not a love song. It was.
I think that he loves Rachel, and I think that it's not, like... I think that, you know, it is, like, you know, they were, like, really in love, and it wasn't, like, I think that the firework thing was just, like, you know, excitement and anticipation, and it didn't actually mean, like, anything, but... Anyway.
Well, it also could just go back to, like, maybe he, Finn, appreciates Rachel more for all that she offers, not just her hot pod, her hot looks, or however she interprets herself, because Rachel puts herself down. She says, Quinn's so much hotter than me. No wonder you had fireworks from her. And that's all up to personal tastes or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, moving into that Finn and Rachel part, like, you know, that she tries to sort of get him back, you know, like, pretty obsessively because... you know, she cheated and then, you know, was like, oh, that was a mistake, you know, and immediately tries to remedy it, but he's not having it. So I guess the questions for that, like, you know, not all she did, like high school is a pretty big deal, but she, you know, she went and kissed Park basically. And I think she kind of tried to sleep with him and he was like, no. But with Finn and Rachel, I'm just curious about, you know, whether he should, you know, you think that he, whether he should forgive her, basically, because, you know, she went and did this thing. She, you know, cheated on him kissing with Puck. And it was very irrational and stupid in the moment. And, you know, I don't know whether she should be, you know, whether they should be forgiven or not, like, basically, whether they should, you know, whether he should, you know, just accept that it was a really stupid mistake or whether it's that big a deal. Clearly it has wounded him pretty badly, but then he's encouraging Quinn to do the same thing. So, Jack, what do you think? Like, if he still, you know, loved Rachel, like, do you think that he should have sort of just been like, you idiot, and then let it go or what?
As in, like, should he forgive her?
Yeah, he, should have he forgiven her, basically?
I think so. You
know. Yeah?
Yeah, no, I think so, because it's very hypocritical behaviour that Finn's doing right now. Like, if he can't be mad at, like, what Rachel did when he's, like, doing the exact same thing. Like, it just bothers me, like, you know? Like,
yeah. I know.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other question is, like, is he right about her being alone, like, regardless of whether he forgave her or not, if you know what I mean? Like, about her being alone to, you know, to appreciate herself and be, you know, whatever it was, a star, etc. Like, you know, that kind of thing. Like, Mitch, do you think that he was kind of right about Rachel, you know, as a friend, basically? Or what do you reckon about Rachel being alone?
Yeah, I find it difficult to have this opinion now. I have such a retrospect on Finchel that I'm thinking of a phrase that I'm not sure if it's correct. It's like trying to look back through the looking glass or something. It's so weird to put myself in the mindset of Finn's a friend to Rachel. He's telling her to be single. No, they're like meant for each other all the way. So I don't know. Like it's really weird. It's almost like to me, this scene was an alternate universe where Finn and Rachel never worked out or whatever. You know, they weren't meant for each other as I just said, I believe there they are. And it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with the rest of the relationship. Their build up. I don't like that. The advice that Finn gave her. And, I'll say one word. You can tell me if I can go into this part. Necklace. Is that good?
Yeah, gone.
Is that fair game? Okay. So the necklace thing that he gives her, and it just, he's not a friend to her though. He really is still in love with her and he's trying to play it off like he is. And the advice he gives her isn't good. It's not what I think he needs or what she needs, and it saddens me is my final conclusion after all that outward thinking.
I don't know. I definitely think that, like, I think that Rachel does need to be alone, though, like, for a little bit, and I'm glad that she does have time by herself, like,
at this instead point. Of being,
yeah, definitely. I just think, like, a lot of times, like, after, like, a relationship, like, a lot of people need to, like, spend time alone rather than just jump to, like, the next person so they can, like, figure themselves out again.
But I
think that's very evident with Rachel.
But I think Rachel is right. She is very good for Finn. She makes him feel good because she appreciates him. She is obnoxious. I appreciate how obnoxious she is, and I like how obnoxious she is.
I agree with that. That's one of the main reasons why I love Finn and Rachel, because I know that they bring out the best in each other, like, ultimately. But still, I think that, like, she still needs to sort of just be alone and realize she doesn't actually need Finn to... I mean, this is actually getting really sad considering what happens, like, in the long run. But she doesn't need Finn to, like, to... This is going to sound terrible. She doesn't need Finn to live. Like, she will survive on her own. And I think that, like, she needs... At this point of the show, not what happens at any time else, at this point of the show, she needs to realize that.
Right, so you're saying, like, per the perspective of silly love songs, it's okay for Rachel to be single. No, I can see that as opposed to, you know, obviously. So, I know where you're coming from, Jack. I know what it feels like to want to go back into a relationship, because you are broken up and you're lonely and the like. It's more of an issue of Finchel is such gold to me that any time that they're not together isn't productive. It's wasted time. I don't find that they're doing anything, and I don't think Rachel, from the best of my memory, does anything significant on her own to go date someone else, to go try a new hobby or whatever. I think that she still would have been better off, as minor as this ends up being, you know, with Finn in this moment. And that's why, I guess, looking through that looking glass backwards, as I was saying, in this weird alternate universe, I'm just like, no, why are you guys wasting time? Just get together again. Like, you don't need... This is dumb. You guys both like each other, and Finn's not dating anyone. He's kind of just messing around with Quinn. Go back to your good thing. Rachel is your good thing. I know she screwed up a lot. And I get why she screwed up is what I'm saying too there, because it's kind of hard to justify that. But I don't know. Do you guys have any major opinions on I don't know. I know we're kind of talking about this now, but like, would Finn in a healthy relationship forgive anyone for cheating on him, especially Rachel? That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, but he's done it. Like, he cheated on Quinn with Rachel in the second episode. If we're counting kissing as cheating, which they sort of do in high school, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, you know, tit for tat, we're equal, or we're both bad for each other?
Yeah,
or...
it's like a pride thing. Like, I don't know. It's weird, but yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, they were in a really good place, and she made a stupid, like, mistake because she was angry about something that happened when they weren't together. And,
Which is dumb. Like, that's still to this day.
It was really dumb of her. Like, it was really dumb of her, and she kind of knows that, which is why she tries to, like, fix it immediately. So the fact that he doesn't forgive it isn't great, but I don't know.
And I like that that's the continuity that does this, though, because I don't like this plot. Like, I like it because it's good. It's written well, but I don't like the outcomes of it. So it's really cool that, like a virgin, that whole bit is just stuck in here still, and that Santana is still, like, you know, giving him mono, like, that she has feelings toward him in a weird way that isn't sexual, but is, I don't know, romantic, in a friendship.
Possessive.
Yeah, she has a lot going on, and,
Yeah,
so Santana's monologue, as we've stated before, is important because, you know, that shows that she's a main character, and she references wanting to be with an NFL player because they're reliable, and kind of like this weird cheeky jest. I didn't know what to make of that personally, because I know I've said in the past I get confused with what Santana understands about her sexuality at these times, and I would think in her thoughts would be the most, you know, sanctimonious place to have that.
Point, I'd say not much.
Yeah.
Again, from looking back through season three, there's a lot of development for her there. Season two, I don't think she knows that much about what's going on with her at all.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Favorite little moments. Do we want to do that as we finish off? Jack, did you want to go first with yours?
So it's when Finn is talking about the kissing booth, that, like, he's going to set up a charity, and Mercedes is just not having it. She's like, this is just for you, so you can get to kiss a bunch of girls, and that's all this is. That's all this means to you. And I thought that was funny.
Yeah, she was the whole reaction, like, it's slightly ridiculous, but yes. My favorites were a couple. I had the Lauren and Santana fight, especially when Santana's like, hello, Lauren. You are a beautiful person. I just love her, and I think they were so funny together. That like their argument and fight was great, even though it was ridiculous. I really love the sleepover scene between Kurt, Mercedes, and Rachel, who are three people that we obviously don't see together that much because we kind of shifted from like Kurt, Mercedes, BFF to Kurt, Rachel, BFF, and we don't really see them, the three of them, together that often. But I also really like just the discussions they were having, basically, like, and about how, you know, Kurt, you know, was telling them and his honesty with himself. I really like that. And then I really love the When I Get You Alone performance, just because it's ridiculous. Like, it's a freaking horrifically gross and terrible song, but it's so funny and it's so well done.
It's Robin Thicke
before he made his comeback for Blurred Lines and before, like, people started having massive controversy about how gross he was. It's, like, young Robin Thicke.
So he's always been quite the gem, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, totally. It's really, but the performance is so funny and, like, ridiculous, and it's just ridiculous that I love it for some reason. And I've totally been to that Gap where they filmed that. It's in the Grove in Los Angeles, and I've totally been there because they filmed it there. When I went to LA, I was going to the Grove, and I was like, I'm going to go look at the Gap where they filmed that stupid fucking song.
Oh my god! I just realized that, like, I saw that in my brain as I was just there physically, and then I watched it again in Glee in my brain, and that's so weird. Yeah. Wow, you tripped me up on two things today with that whole Bucky's actor is also in Gossip Girl thing, too.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was funny. Alright, so... Then I'll go to my moment.
Go ahead.
It was I couldn't pick. There was Quinn describing what a record was to Sam, because at first I thought she was talking about paper records, like I don't know, high school records or something. And then she so snarkily is just like, people used to listen to music on these things, and I'm trying to find you a romantic song. And it was just like, so snippy and just, like, she knew it was up. She is Queen Bee, and he's right. She loves being Queen Bee. It's fabulous. And, like, she's never wrong. You can't catch her in a lie or something. So, and then next one was a combination of Artie's, especially his starting face in PYT, where he's like, hey, girl, you PYT. And he's like, he's kind of doing like that, oh, yeah, kind of voice. And then Mike's dancing around the halls, and he has these little jacket flips that he does with his dance moves that just make this so fabulous. So, very, very fun song. And I probably stole that from, like, you know, a song that's my favorite thing, but it was kind of branching off of more of Artie's faces because they were just so specific to that moment that it was comedic gold. I can tell that, you know, Kevin was, he was laying on thick there.
Yeah. How about quotes? Jack, do you want to go first?
Yep. So mine's Brittany. It's when, Will is saying, what does he say? Something like, I have one word for you.
The theme. Yeah.
Yeah. I have one word for you. And he writes love on the board. And then Brittany goes, is it love? Totally going to graduate now. It was really funny.
She's so ridiculous. Mine, this episode, seriously, one of the most iconic lines of Glee for me, which is Blaine daydream about Jeremiah saying, if he and I got married, the Gap would give me a 50% discount, which is just so ridiculous. Blaine is so ridiculous, and I love it. Like, it becomes annoying, I'm not going to lie. It becomes annoying as the show's reality gets a bit deeper in terms of, like, hang on, we're trying to make these out as real people, not as, like, weird jokes. But Blaine's ridiculousness at this point I love. And just a couple of the things, like, later on as well when he was like, most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to me, and that's saying something because I've performed at theme parks. Like, he's so melodramatic and I love him. But, yeah, if he and I got married, the Gap would give me a 50% discount is, like, if you're in, like, the Klain fandom or, like, following, like, the Warblers fandom at that time, oh, my God, it was, it like, stopped the world. It was so funny, that quote. It's so good. But, yeah, Mitch, do you want to go ahead with your quotes?
Yeah, totally. All right, so mine's Brittany to Santana after Rachel cuts her down, of all people, and they're in the hallway, and Brittany's just like, why not try rocking back and forth? That's what they do in the movies. So cute.
Oh, I love that little breakdown of Santana's at the start, like, where she's just like, I just try to be really honest with people when I think that they suck. It's just like, she doesn't get it. Like, she's genuinely affected. She doesn't get why she's terrible, and it always kind of makes me love her a little bit. But,
I know.
Yeah.
And if I wasn't such a jaded viewer, I would look at her crying as being, you know, like, oh, feel sympathy for Santana. But it's like, no, she got what she deserved. She had those just desserts coming for a while. So,
Rachel.
But then again, like, what Rachel says to her.
By saying that she'd be working on a pole. Like, yes, Santana's terrible, but yeah, like.
She did fight fire with fire, but Santana would say that about someone else. So it's not—it's not like I can say that that Rachel didn't stoop to,
like,
a lower
to
level.
Low that Santana wouldn't. Yeah,
yeah, and that's what Santana was presenting it as, and I was like, no, like, you have to—if you can dish it out, you can take it at least. I know it's not right to fight fire with fire, but just, like, you know, if you're gonna take this attitude, just suck it up at least when you get it back. I don't know. Go ahead, Jack.
The cool thing about that scene, though, looking back in retrospective, is where Rachel was having a go at Santana, and, like, the only place you're going to work is on a pole and stuff. The cool thing about, like, watching it back like this is that, like, in season 4, Rachel tries to help Santana get a better job when she pretty much is working at, like, an exploitative bar. So I think that's, like, on a character level, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Really good point. And, of course, they work on Broadway together. I mean, hell, like, that's not working on a pole. So, I mean, what a great parallel there, too, Jack, that you came up with. All right, so then I had one little bit, I guess I should say, after it's PYT, and then Tina runs up and goes, Brittany runs up and goes, that's my man, and his legs don't work, all giddy. And then, for some reason, Finch decides to shout out, Tenderoni!
What does that even mean? I don't know.
It's why
Tenderoni is, like, actually a really bad word, but I can't remember what it means. I'm going to look it up. It's something about, like, young, like, people, I don't know. Yeah,
because it's a lyric in the song, and that's just where he came up with it. And then Tina, in the epitome of all Tina moments, right before the commercial break, God. I'm so in love that I might just cry.
So let's run through the songs very quickly. So we had Fat Bottom Girls, which we've already discussed. Very fun number, like, you know, people really like the, like, you know, the sound and get into that number, but as we've discussed, not the best for that moment. PYT, which was Artie and Mike, which I didn't love on screen, but they did it live on the tour and it was really good. Again, on screen, I was kind of like, this is really weird and convoluted, but I really liked it in the tour. When I Get You Alone, as we've discussed, Firework and Silly Love Songs were the properly released songs. And then we had, like, Tina singing, like, half of My Funny Valentine while, like, breaking down on the floor crying because of how much she likes Mike Chang. So does anyone have any thoughts on any particular of the numbers that we haven't sort of discussed in terms of plot already?
Well, My Funny Valentine deserves a little bit of kudos too in that whole vein of Tina cries when she's in love, I think. or when she just has feels, she just cries. She doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. Jack, how about you? Did you have anything about any of the songs in this episode besides what we've talked about?
I don't like Firework. I'm sorry. Like,
no.
It's catchy, but no.
Was that supposed to emulate the Katy Perry music video where, I think it is, where fireworks are kind of in her face? I love that lighting.
Yeah,
I think it's beautiful,
it's
though.
It's definitely, like, yeah, there's something about it that's meant to be similar to the video. Like, not everything, but yeah, there's something about it that's meant to be kind of like the video, but yeah.
And this is the song that forever ago, on earlier flashbacks of Glee Chat, I was referencing how Lea Michele's good at matching the vocalese of an artist, where she finds the same vowels and, like, little breaths that the artist does in nuanced ways that not a lot of covers do, in my opinion, in general. And then I remember you two were just like, no, I mean, that's just whatever, that's nothing special. But I still, listening to this, think that she does a fantastic job matching Katy Perry's Ignai, especially that one, like, really harsh I vowel that she sings. I think that part's really cool.
I sort of know what you mean, but I also don't put too much store in, like, a cover being an exact copy of the original. I think that it should be, you know, making the most of the artist singing it, not, like, just trying to copy the original. But
yeah, and I know where you're coming from. I'm kind of just, I'm coming from an observational standpoint.
Yeah. Silly Love Songs is at the Breadsticks, and it's very, you know, all of the warblers are there, they're all hugging, it's all cute and weird, like, you know, that whole scene, you know, spawned a lot of, like, Inter Warbler New Directions shipping and stuff like that, like, you know, very all sorts of little you know, things,
yeah.
Like Wes and Santana before we knew Santana was definitely gay, and you know, the you know, all sorts of little cute things, and so I always really liked that song as well.
I like mind blanked completely. Like, I knew this song was in the episode because I watched it, like, just then. But when you asked about which songs, I was like, no, they're okay. I completely forgot. Silly Love Songs is my favorite Warblers song ever. And it's a good song.
Yeah.
It's one of Paul McCartney's better solo moments.
Yeah, it's a cute. It is a really cute song, and I really like
it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, it's adorable.
And it's interesting because people would, like, again, like, talking about this generation, most people would be sort of most familiar with that song purely from the snippets of it in Moulin Rouge, and probably not heard the original, like, of the extended song. So Glee would have sort of brought that back into the public eye a little bit. But, yeah.
It's so pretty in Mulan, yeah, but you're right.
Yeah,
it's even better in full.
But I really like it. It is a cute song.
And don't they do this later? They do the Moulin Rouge elephant song.
Oh, they do. I don't want to talk about that because I hated it so much. Can we not? Like, let's just leave.
Yeah, I have to go, guys.
Yeah, so we'll wrap up now, basically, with with that, and you know, next time we'll have you know, the next episodes for season two, but don't want to talk about Elephant Love Song Medley in terms of Glee, so we'll just leave it on a good note of silly love songs. So yeah, thank you to everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you all again in a couple of weeks. So bye
everyone.
Bye. So that was our episode. As mentioned earlier, if you want to listen to our sort of more in-depth discussion about the issues with, you know, liking or not liking someone based on a social group, you can keep listening. As I said, it's, you know, not in any way, you know, hopefully not in any way offensive, but it is not, you know, the discussion of people who are in a university classroom or anything. It's, you know, some opinions and just feeling out ideas about this from our own lives and society. So Hopefully it will not be, you know, a problem for anyone, but if you do have a problem with it, you can stop listening, basically, if you don't want to hear our opinions on that, which is fair enough. So if you are, if you do want to, keep listening after the credits. If, you know, if you don't want to, that's fine. Bye. And I think that one of the things that's important to kind of note is that people don't want to be wanted for their body or in spite of their body. Like, either way, like, even if, you know, there are men or women out there who might have, like, you know, a fetish or even a preference for bigger girls. Like, that's something that they go after on purpose. And then there are a lot of bigger girls who are like, I don't want you to like me just as some sort of fetish, if you know what I mean. And then there are people like Puck who's like, I like you even though you're like this. And that's also really offensive. Like, it shouldn't be, you know, oh, I like you because of your body, and it shouldn't be, I like you in spite of your body. And neither of those options are very good, if you know what I mean. And I think that that's kind of what it was for Lauren, that, you know, she didn't want someone being like, ooh, you know, I like you and I'm going to sing this song about how awesome your body is, or I like you in spite of your body, you must not get very many dates, and I'm here to love you, so you better appreciate it, kind of thing. So I don't know, it's very difficult ground, but I don't think it's too hard to see why it would make her feel sort of offensive and uncomfortable, basically. Like, you know, someone basically spotlighting her for better or worse in terms of, you know, focusing on her body in terms of why they like her. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to believe, but yeah, her reactions were definitely not favorable. They were kind of really awkward and cute, but very not favorable. And I did feel bad for her. And at least she was very honest with, you know, her about it. And she made Puck think, which I like. I like that, you know, she tells him the truth about things and that he goes off and thinks about it and what it means, which I really like. But, yeah, no, Mitch, did you want to kind of, like, elaborate on that at all? Like, I'm not sure what you meant earlier, but did you, like, what was it exactly that you were sort of confused about?
No, I just get confused with Zicy in general. Like, I think Fat Bottom Girls was the wrong aim target, I should say, because that wasn't the main idea that I was going for. It was more of things like the library, where she seems to treat Puck in a way that doesn't make sense to what her ultimate goal is. I never, ever, ever appreciate or support a couple where one member decides that they want to I don't know if this is the right word, marginalize or put down the other in order to make, like, kind of like, it's like an unhealthy sub-dom relationship to me. This is what Zicy and Puck have going on with her saying all these things to him, and I'm just like, yeah, but he doesn't. I don't know if he likes it or not. If he does, then that's cool. But if it's not,
he definitely does. That's the thing. Like, I think it's a healthy sub-dom relationship.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I was confused, and that's why I was trying to figure it out. Because, like, yeah, there was never a conversation, unless yes, there was kind true. Of where they had like the agreement. Like, do you like me bossing you around? Good. Yeah. That's how it's going to be. And that's where I feel conflicted about Zicy. That I'm just like, you're so give and take. I don't know. Like, when can he understand that this is the time that he follows, and when can he understand that this is the time he leads? It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I don't know if
I get all lost in that.
Like, I don't know if, like, family musical television show Glee is the moment to have, like, a very special episode about, like, safe, sane, and consensual, like, sub-dom relationships. Like, I'm just, like, putting that out there. It's probably not the show that's going to be addressed on. Just saying. But that being said, I do get what you mean. Yeah. In terms of that, I think that Zicy's, you know, yeah, she is bossy. Puck clearly is into that. But I also think that, you know, a lot of her, like, you know, rejection and stuff like that is, number one, she's, you know, truthful. She doesn't, like, she's not desperate. She's not chasing any guy. Like, if some guy's interested in her, that he's going to have to kind of work, you know, pretty hard to prove that he's decent. But, you know, of course, like, things like, you know, no envelope of cash, no muffin basket, it's a bit extreme and ridiculous. But I think that, yeah, you know, part of that may be a defense mechanism of some sort. Like, you know, I don't know how much of it is sheer confidence, given that we've seen, you know, episodes with her before, like the, you know, the singles, the old maids club or whatever, like, you know, like little snippets of her in the past. I don't know how much we're meant to take into account.
Well, I guess what confuses me too is that she seems to be very confident in that. Maybe I'm assuming her to be superhuman then, that I wouldn't think of her to be as affected by Fat Bottom Girls as she was. But then again, I think if I was to be put in that same position, you know, like, for instance, once again, if Santana was singing Trouty Mouth to me, I would be just as kind of upset that someone was focusing on a part of my body or my being. And, and that's where I can get her being upset about it. I don't know, it's just, it's, yeah, it's a hard thing to go about, because you can see Puck's attentions, but he's so lost in it.
Yeah, I think that being confident doesn't equal superhuman, and I think, and like, I don't know, they don't ever really address about whether she is genuinely confident about her body or whether it's a defense mechanism, like whether her controlling and bossiness is a defense mechanism. It could certainly go either way, or it could be a little from column A, a little from column B. Like, I don't think that she's superhuman, and I think that
And I'd be all for, like, I mean, I hesitate to say superhuman, even though I was the one that coined that there, but I'd still lean toward her saying, I am very confident with my body, and being truthful in that statement. And the only thing that rises any doubt, because it's, to me, in my non-encyclopedic brain, Jack, the moment that I can remember where she's been like, I don't like, you know, being marginalized or focused on for my body. My point is that I don't think she's not confident, or to take out the double negative, I think she's confident.
I don't know. I think that even if she is, I think that it does, like...
Yeah.
Like, I still don't think that it would, you know... That appropriate to focus on,
because, like, I have things about myself that I could say I'm confident about on a day-to-day basis, but perhaps that's just because the people who used to pick on me about those things have grown up and wouldn't think to say that anymore, because they know the attribution that comes with. So maybe if someone was to kind of prick that again with me, I'd feel the same way as I did back then, a little bit less of a sting, as I guess I'm less hormonal and teenagery. But yeah, I can understand that perspective of Zyces, where you're confident until someone picks on you about something, if that makes sense. Like, you don't need someone else to confirm that you're good, but if they pick on you, it's still going to hurt.
Yeah, and I also think that it's like, it, you know, regardless, it wasn't, you know, Puck picking on her, but I also think that, like, you know, if you are someone, like, if you are someone in a position like Lauren Zyces, for example, in this circumstance, or anyone really, I think that it applies to literally anyone, but... You know, I think that it applies to, you know, race. I think that it applies to looks. I think that it applies to all sorts of things. What you don't want, if someone likes you, you don't want them publicly, privately, whatever. You don't want them to be like, I like you because you are, okay, you know, I like you because you're fat. I like you despite you being fat. I like, oh, I really like black girls. I like you because you're black. Oh, I like you even though you're black, if you know what I mean. Oh, I really, really like Asian guys. Oh, you're Asian, but I still like you, if you know what I mean. That attitude, either way, is shitty. So I think that that is what we're looking at here, as opposed to I like you, full stop, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, I'm personally attracted to you. That's awesome. But people either... You know, if someone is of any kind of, like, you know, marginalized thing or minority or, like, type, if there's, you know, anything like that, you will get people who like them because of that specifically, and that's considered really bad because that's dehumanizing them. Or you will get people who like them, people who will think that they're doing them a favor, like, I like you in spite of this. Both of those attitudes are terrible, and I think that that is what the clutch of the Fat Bottom Girls problem is. Sorry.
In the end of the day...
Oh, sorry, go on, Mitch.
That's fine. In the end of the day, I think there's a fine line to be drawn, though, because there can be something very minor about someone that you can care for. It doesn't have to be their whole demeanor, their weight, their race, their whatever, that you could look for particularly in a person. I mean, it's hard to even go so minor because it seems trivial, but I guess I could stick with, I don't know, I like blondes, or say, not saying myself, but, you know, I like blondes and I date blonde people, and I'm not sure that that would ever come off as the ways that you're describing, which I agree can come off as very offensive. I don't think that they do all the time. I think that sometimes people have certain tastes and that's just their thing, and they're not liking the person because they're black, they're, or whatever, you know, they like black people and that's it. So maybe that's what you're trying to come across with, Natalie.
There's,
I don't know,
the difference between what people generally find physically attractive and them like fetishizing a subcategory of people. Trust me, you don't want to get into it because there's no right, like there's no argument here. Like it's not okay. It's in this day and age, it's 100% not okay. So I really think that we should probably leave that there. But yes, of course there are people who are like, oh, like my, like do you remember the like freaking like hoo-ha that happened when like John Mayer went on Ellen or like some show and he said something in some interview about like him, like, not liking black women, like that he just, like, he wasn't attracted to black women. You can't, like, it was a controversy. Like, you cannot generalize a type, basically, about what you're attracted to. No matter what you personally feel, you can't do it. And I think that that is kind of what the issue is here, that it is offensive to be expressing attraction to someone because they are part of a group as opposed to for who they are individually. And I think that's sort of the clincher there, but I don't know. Jack, any thoughts on that?
No, very interesting. Like, I didn't have anything to add. Yeah.
Basically it's, yeah, the difference between treating someone as a person and treating someone as part of a group or liking them in spite of them being part of a group. It's, that's all it is. Like, at the end of the day.
I find like debates and like controversial topics like this really interesting. And like, that's what we would do a lot, like in, like, well, not a lot, but like every now and then, like in film my psychology classes, there would be like, mm-hmm. like, especially at one lesson we had, like, I think it was like, I can't remember what the questions were. And this was like 6 months ago. There was like three controversial issues. And we pretty much just debated the whole thing about it using stuff we had learned like in that class. So I find like, what you guys are saying really interesting, because like, I don't know, it's just, I like it, because like there's no right or wrong answer. It's just like,
and the difference, I think, just to add like one more thing, is what difference what you're saying, Mitch, about blondes and stuff like that, is the whole aiming up thing about prejudice. Is that you can't really make those kind, you can't compare those kind of calls to things that are like not marginalized groups. It's different when it is different when it is any kind of marginalized group. So I think that that is probably what the difference is.
Well, but, yeah, actually, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. I think I was thinking it not from anything about what the group is or isn't in society, simply just from their physicality. But when you look at it from a marginalized perspective, I can see that. I can see the perspective.
There is a massive difference between knowing that you find like the look, the physical look of like Asian women attractive, to saying, oh, like I have a thing for Asian women. There is a difference between appreciating like the physical look of someone and the way that it's publicly addressed. It is becoming a real problem. And so, yeah, we'll probably leave that there, because this is not too much of a part of the episode. But the point is, I think that Lauren, you know, would probably like to just be treated like a person, and that's about it.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd hope that you wouldn't take my – I don't even know how you would describe my opinion, because I don't really know that I have one. You know, but I'd hope that you wouldn't take it as anything but, you know, simple curiosity, because
I mean,
I don't know that in my life or in my friend groups or in my social groups, whatever, that I've had enough of this conversation. And it's important to have it. So it's just – it's good to hear both sides and just to, like, suss out what is right, what's wrong, and how to make people feel the best way you can without, like, you know, stepping over them and doing whatever it was that Puck did to Zeiss, you know, that made her feel so
like
bad.
He clearly didn't know that it was a problem, but the fact that he thought that she would appreciate that means that he was thinking about her in a way that she didn't want to be thought about. But
yeah, and that's hard too, because it's like Puck's not a mind reader, right? I mean, yeah. I guess he should have respected her as a person.
He's a naive teenage boy.
He is,
so
he is.
So we can't really expect a lot better.
Yeah, so this is a good lesson that Glee gives us then, that we can learn that people don't like being, you know, treated in that way. And not to say treated as in it's a harsh thing. They don't like to be, you have a good word there, Natalie, appreciated in that given way. But Jack, you had something else to say?
Yeah.
I was saying it's very, like, this whole thing is very, like, appropriate for the age. Like, even, like, 17, 18, 19, like, around, like, my, closer to my age group, I'm constantly hearing, like, people, no, bad intents or anything, but, like, someone might say, oh, I'm not attracted to Asian guys or something, you know? And, yeah. like, that's not
it
great,
might
but,
be
like,
a fact,
I hear that a lot.
But it's not okay to say, basically. It may be a physical fact of what you are attracted to, but it's not okay to say as a generalization, basically. And yeah, it's a lot of things. It's something that people haven't really learned yet.
But what does that fall into when people find themselves, I don't know, like it's so hard to not think of an example that anyone could tie to anything else. What if someone doesn't like something of their own variation or stereotype or et cetera, race, whatever. Is that still considered in the same vein as offensive to that marginalized group if one is part of that marginalized group?
This is such an intense question. There are certainly people who are like, yeah, parts of various groups or races or, you know, sexualities or things like that, that don't really like their own type, like, and that's also, that's a whole, like, another barrel of issues that you probably don't want to, like, waste time talking about here. If you can go and have that conversation with someone, that's great. But yes, there's certainly people who are like, you know, they only like white guys and they're not white themselves, and they're allowed to like white guys, but it's also, I would call, there's some internalized racism there, like some internalized, like, prejudice of some kind.
Well, so, I think it relates a lot back to where we were talking about internalized homophobia, to bring this into, like, an internalized racism that I was coming at. So you could say, for example, totally random, that let's just say a black person does not like black people to date. And that was the question
thing
I was presenting.
There's no, regardless of what kind of group that you're talking about, there is no such thing as liking or not liking all of one group. You can't like
yeah I get that,
like,
that
there's no such thing as that, and to say that is you being prejudiced against a stereotype, basically, or something like that. So
that makes a lot of sense.
And you're not treating people on a person-by-person basis.
Yes,
is the bottom line of it, basically.
I get it.
I think we can probably leave that there.
No, that was educational, and I feel very informed from the conversation we're having. So thank you for hearing me out.
Well, I mean, that's fine.